guys. We loved the band. I took them out on Crew Fest. That was Low Life. Our job is done for the week. Miss Carrie Casey.
That's true, but we're going to be back next week with more rock, more Six Picks, and of course, your blast from the past.
Which I love doing. I'm Nikki Six.
I'm Carrie Casey.
We'll see you next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome. Hi, Jalene.
Hello, Peter.
Well, history is unfolding as we speak. Muammar Gaddafi.
Well,
history,
yeah,
it
looks like. I mean, his sons have been captured.
Arrested, yeah.
And as you said earlier, the S is hitting the fan in Libya.
Yeah, and they don't know where Gaddafi is, the elder. Libyan rebels raced into Tripoli Sunday and met little resistance as Muammar Gaddafi's defenders melted away. You know, he had a lot of mercenaries.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And his 42-year rule rapidly crumbled. The euphoric fighters celebrated with residents of the capital in Green Square, the symbolic heart of the fading regime. Gaddafi's whereabouts were unknown. Opposition fighters captured his sons, and
this is kind of how it always goes. They always hit the sons, and the big man's always in hiding somewhere.
Hundreds of jubilant men and women massed in Green Square, chanting, "It's over, Frizzhead!"
Which, I mean, this whole situation is not funny at all, but that's funny.
Using a mocking nickname of the curly-haired Gaddafi. The revelers fired shots in the air, clapped and waved the rebels' tricolor flag, set fire to the green flag of Gaddafi's regime, and shot holes in a poster with the leader's image. You know, it's interesting. There are virtually no institutions in Libya. Is that he claimed that this was just a tribal society, so there's it wasn't much of a military, no judiciary, no parliament at all.
Right.
He ran all the businesses.
My gosh.
So they're going to have to reinvent
the wheel.
The country from the ground up. And you think, well, hey, maybe that'd be a good idea. And you wonder,
let's send the baggers over there. We can just give them Libya, and then they'll get out of our hair.
or the libertarians. We'll talk about
okay.
that. Libertarians, they're going to go off in their own little man-made islands.
Yes. I mean, truly amazing.
We'll talk
in a
about
very
that.
Frightening way.
Believe it or not, I want to talk about sports, too. The Tigers, in first place, swept Cleveland. Absolutely amazing.
I can't believe it. I was thinking about the whole sports thing because we have listeners from all over the country and the world, but this is Detroit. It's a local show, and our Lions have won two games in a row.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. But this is not sports talk, folks. So.
We're just happy. We have to celebrate the little things in Detroit.
Let me introduce it. So you wonder, how did these rebels win? If you saw any of the television footage, they got guys like dressed in street clothes with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, firing these automatic weapons, and the people they were fighting was the army and also all these mercenaries. But then we come to find out, let me switch to this screen, NATO officials cited an intensification of American aerial surveillance in and around the capital city as a major factor in helping to tilt the balance after months of steady erosion. NATO flew 20,000 sorties over there, so they had a little bit of a helping hand. But watching these guys come into Tripoli reminded me of these scenes of Castro's men coming into Havana 50-some years ago. Uh-huh. Again, a ragtag army beats this, this formal army. This, in that case, backed by the dictator was backed by the United States in the 50s. So we'll see. This is very interesting.
Yes.
What has occurred. Okay, we didn't do our usual introduction. Hi, Peter Werby, Angeline Jordan with you. This is the Night Call Show. We've been carrying on for a few decades here. Not Jeline, but right. I've been here a while.
I'm a little over a decade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. And for those of you that do not have letters on your phone.
Yeah, it's a new day. 313-298-9743. But for those of you who still have that rotary, you just keep rocking.
Yeah. Do people still have rotaries?
Yeah. I'm sure. A lot of people, you know, things come back and people like.
Can you still have, is anybody out there with a rotary? You can email 108. They probably wouldn't have.
Computer access. I don't know. Maybe they have it as a shtick type of thing. Retro.
But you could email us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
We read them during the show.
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if they're short. Right. We also have an increasingly active Facebook page. We've been doing more and more and more on it.
Is that a mouse in your pocket?
Yeah, right. It's the royal we. Because Jeline and Debbie, our friend in Massachusetts, does it all. And our thanks. My thanks. I'm saying plural again. But it's facebook.com/nightcall. Friends wanted. And like I say, we're going to make it more active. Ask you. Because it occurs to me, and I don't know anything about Facebook. I just read it. Right?
Yeah.
But then I'm beginning to see what its possibilities are.
Right. To open up dialogue.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Because there's been these dialogues. And Jeline wrote on it, what do you want to do? We're going to talk about a lot of subjects and ask, what do you want to talk about tonight? And Scott, for instance, wrote in on the Facebook page, I got to count this off. Jobs, 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 and jobs.
Oh, and jobs, he said.
And jobs.
At the end.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely people want to talk about that.
You know, I ran into somebody. I was at this very interesting rally yesterday that had John Conyers and Representative Hanson Clark.
I saw some pictures of that.
Yeah. Bob King, the president of the UAW, mm-hmm. Cindy Estrada, the vice president. And it was in Clark Park on the southwest side of Detroit. And it involved the Arab community, the Mexican-American community, and the African-American community. So it was pretty incredible. Great music.
Yeah,
had to be translating all this stuff. So, I mean, it gives you an idea of the conservatives hate this word, multicultural nature of Detroit, how it's always been. You know, one time, the most prominent...
That's funny you say that.
The most prominent ethnic nationality in Detroit was Polish.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it is a wonderful melting pot here. One of the many things that appealed to me.
Yeah. But so why did I bring that up? There must have been a reason.
Well, we were on
jobs,
Facebook. Jobs. Steve said, and then you were at a rally.
Okay.
Yeah,
I can't remember. It'll come back to me.
Yes, it will.
Mom always used to say, if it's important, you'll remember.
That's right. Peter.
Right. Jerry writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. General Electric, this is about job, is planning to move its 115-year-old X-ray division from Waukesha, Wisconsin to Beijing.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know what?
On them.
Now, here's this not just multinational. In fact, can you really even call it an American company?
No, they don't pay taxes, right?
No, that's right. They made $5.1 billion in the United States last year, but paid no taxes.
Zero. Where is the protesting going on surrounding that?
So everybody's pissed off when you hear this. You go, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Everybody says, what is this? Why is this happening?
Right.
But let's see. Jerry says, in addition to moving the headquarters, the company will invest $2 billion in China and train more than 65 engineers and create 6 research centers. And then he talks about, as you said, about how they haven't paid taxes. So Jerry says, let me get this straight. President Obama appointed GE chairman Jeff Immelt to head his commission on job creation. Immelt is supposed to create jobs. And Jerry says, I guess the president forgot to tell him in which country he was supposed to be creating those jobs.
No kidding.
So when you see folks, I mean, you know, the Republicans are just licking their lips thinking, oh, Barack Obama is getting so unpopular. We are going to get the presidency. It doesn't matter.
They're so happy, aren't they?
Yeah.
Frothing.
And yet, his lack of popularity or his decreasing popularity isn't just from people that are going to say, well, I got an idea. Let's put Michelle Bachmann in the White House.
And Rick Perry.
Yeah, it's people like us, well, I mean, Jalene and I, and others, that if you said, do you think Barack Obama is doing a good job, we'd say no.
Right.
But we ain't hardly going to vote for any of those crazy people.
And I will always go back. And, you know, even when in the 8 years of Bush, when we were doing this show or the syndicated show, Peter, we were saying this is going to be tough when it comes to the next election if a Democrat gets in, or for whoever really, but a Democrat. It's going to be tough because it's in such a state of irrepair, disrepair.
There's nothing now we could do. Like, for instance, and I think I've said this before, and I owe this to social critic and linguist Noam Chomsky. And he said, I always vote for the lesser of the two evils. Who wants the greater of the two evils?
And it's pretty simple, isn't it?
So you might, I mean, there's arguments against that. Like for instance, people voted for Lyndon Johnson over Barry Goldwater because, oh, this guy is going to start all these wars. So Johnson started this war in Vietnam based on lies. In Germany, the people said, oh, we got to vote for Hindenburg because we don't want Hitler to get in. And then Hindenburg appoints Hitler as chancellor. So
how do you win?
I don't think that voting is the end all of it.
Right.
I mean, it can be the manifestation of movements. But if we're just hoping, back to that word again, that some politician that we put in there will do our bidding rather than corporate bidding or whatever else or whatever else is motivating. Usually it's corporate bidding in this case.
Yes, big
sure.
time.
It's hopeless. So
we're pretty much SOL on that.
Yes,
on that.
We are.
Hey, we were talking about phones, and Sam wrote in. He has a rotary phone.
All right.
He recently picked it up at an old antique store in England, and it's awesome. I love it.
I have one somewhere in my garage.
Really? I don't know how you have things even stored in your garage. You have the smallest garage ever.
I used to keep my car in there.
I don't know how.
I had a classic car. I had a 69 Ford convertible.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the weekend to talk about
it. Yeah. We have, folks, if you're listening from some other place, we have the Dream Nightmare. Or no, the
Dream
Nightmare Cruise. What is it? The Dream Cruise.
Yeah.
Some of us are kind of fried on it now. But people have a grand time.
It's a great thing for the city.
You almost got hit by this big storm there, didn't you?
I did get hit by the big storm. Bam! It was scary.
Yeah, this big wind came at 65 miles an hour, toppled power lines.
It's terrifying, actually.
There's a million people that come into Detroit to watch this cavalcade of restored cars.
It's a time machine.
Yeah. And this is not like there's something called, I'm sorry to get snooty on you folks, but the Concorde d'Elegance. Ever go to that?
What?
This is something that used to be at Meadowbrook, and they would have, no 55 Chevys need apply. This was like 1931 Bugattis.
Oh.
1929 Chrysler double cowl, two windshields. And, I mean, these works of art from the teens and the 20s and the 30s. Ford would send out these stainless steel 1960 Lincoln and Ford Fairlanes, they had
very cool.
Henry Ford's hemp car. That'll get your attention.
Henry Ford, he did have a hemp car.
He was big on
hemp. That's right.
He was big on hemp.
I bet he was.
But he wanted to, he didn't smoke, he just.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Where are we? Okay. 313-298-WRIF. Jillian, I was thinking when I was coming here, I am getting lazier and lazier.
I know. I've noticed.
Yeah. And I was thinking I wanted to turn this over more to the listeners. So you gotta call in. 313.
In the first segment, you mean?
Anytime.
You going to open this up, Peter?
Because, what we always do is we argue with callers that don't agree with us.
Yeah.
And they're not there anymore, hardly.
Yeah, well, they're there. Maybe we just need to encourage them to call.
Well, all right. So what I was going to do, because, if you call a talk show host, they command the bully pulpit. They can cut you off anytime they want.
But the volume.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. You have your audience really well trained, though, after 40 years, Peter. No one really even picks up the phone in the first segment unless they're new.
That's right. But
so do it.
Okay. Well, let's hear. But what I was thinking about doing is that I would allow those of you who don't agree with me or with Jalene to speak fully your, well, I don't, you know, I don't want you to go on like we do.
Oh, see, you're already backing down.
Yeah, yeah. But to give your opinion, and I, you know.
We won't say anything?
Well, we won't. I'll say, okay, I don't agree. But, and then maybe we'll.
Respond?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is a dirty job, and, you know, we're glad to do it, but maybe we're going to shift some of it onto you. All right, here's the deal. You may have seen this. Warren Buffett, you know, he's the 80-year-old oracle of Omaha, one of the three richest men in the whole world. And he's saying, tax the rich.
He is, and this was in the New York Times, right?
Yeah. You know what? The reason he said that is because Jalene and I say, eat the rich. And that's always, you know, if you make radical demands, then people will always compromise. So we say, eat the rich. Guys, whoa, I mean, I better scale that back a little. How about just tax the rich?
Right.
Anyway, Republicans have fiercely resisted any attempts by President Obama and Democrats in Congress to make higher taxes for the wealthy part of any budget plan, insisting instead on all deficit-curbing measures be made through spending cuts. So, I mean, we'll go on with this.
He's making a lot of sense.
Yeah, he is saying, tax me more.
Yeah.
He said, here's what Warren Buffett, this multi-billionaire, says. My friends and I have been coddled long enough by a billionaire-friendly Congress. It's time for our government to get serious about shared sacrifice. He said, he's not sacrificing at all. He said that of the other 20 people in his office, he pays the lowest percentage of taxes than anybody.
I mean, he's full disclosure here,
yeah.
And this is what we've been talking about all along. Finally, one guy decides to speak out.
This Starbucks CEO, Howard Schultz, says the same thing. Here in this article says, from the general taxpaying public, the reaction was almost instantaneous. Warren Buffett was one of the single most mentioned topics on Twitter as of last Monday afternoon, as was the title of his op-ed piece, Stop Coddling the Super Rich. And get this, nearly 55,000 people voted in an MSNBC.com poll on his comments. 95% of the people agreed with him.
Wow.
So that would be my question to begin with. Is there anyone out there that thinks that we ought to not tax the rich? In other words, let the Bush tax, not only let the Bush tax cuts expire, which I can't, I mean, this is one of the reasons I don't approve of Barack Obama,
yes.
Because he gave to these insane right wingers.
I mean, he just really gave.
Rolled
just
over.
Yeah.
So, is there anybody that thinks that we ought to raise taxes significantly, say, on incomes over a million? And then it would be progressively up. I mean, say it would be like a third on people making a million. And then when you get to 5 million, there'd be like 50% on that. And then when you get to 10 million, imagine there's people making that. There's whole cities. The city that Jalene and I live in, not together, is 19 million.
Yeah.
And that's for the whole city. That's for the cops, the fire, all the street cleaning.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, and a lot of people. And there are people, though, that make more than that. I mean, in other words, in fact, and the problem with all cities, our city has dropped its budget or its revenue, both, because it has to have a balanced budget, I think, from like 27 million to 19 million.
Yeah, they're closed. City Hall's closed on Friday.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things.
They furloughed workers. They had to take a 15% cut. They agreed to it because the money, it just isn't there. But there are people around, you know, a few thousand of them, that that make more than that, more than our city's budget in for their yearly income. So tax the rich, I guess.
Make it fair.
Oh, and when you start getting over 10 million, then it goes up to finally what they call the marginal tax rate of 90%, as it was under Eisenhower. Does anybody disagree with that? 313-298-WRIF. Here is what the Republicans say, that to tax the rich, that's a job killer.
Right.
Now, didn't they figure anything out that they repealed all these taxes on the rich and the economy has gotten worse and there's been no jobs created? And they blame that on Obama. I mean, it's under his watch. I mean, that tends to happen.
Right.
It's
made no difference whatsoever, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're saying.
But here, the Republicans do want to raise taxes. Now, they said no taxes whatsoever. They absolutely wouldn't do it.
Well, especially the baggers.
Yes. And, you know, those. So the most extreme end of the Republican Party, the teabaggers, the baggers, are the ones that are calling the shots. Congressional Republicans want to raise your taxes Wow. And it says here in this piece in Yahoo News, impossible, right? Republican lawmakers are so virulently anti-tax, surely they will fight to prevent a payroll tax increase on virtually every wage earner starting January 1st next year. Apparently not. Many of the same Republicans who fought hammer and tong to keep the George W. Bush-era income tax from expiring on schedule are now saying a different temporary tax should end as planned, and by their own definition, that amounts to a tax increase. The tax break extension they oppose is sought by President Obama. Now, get this one. Unlike proposed changes in the income tax, this policy helps 46% of all Americans who owe no federal income tax but who pay a payroll tax on practically every dime they earn. In other words, you pay federal taxes on things like investment property, capital gains, and what have you. But the payroll tax is the FICA tax, what comes out to pay for Social Security and Medicare.
Y'all know that one.
Yeah, right. At issue is a tax that the vast majority of workers pay, but many don't recognize because they don't read or don't understand their pay stubs. Normally, stay with me, workers pay 6.2% of their wages towards a tax designated for Social Security. Their employer pays an equal amount for a total of 12.4% per worker. So we have Social Security, we have Medicare for when people retire.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I mean, it's got to be a lot of money needed.
Yeah.
But as part of bipartisan spending deal last December, Congress approved Obama's request to reduce workers' share to 4.2% for 1 year. Employer rate did not change. So, in other words, there was a tax reduction on the vast majority of American wage earners.
You and I.
And the idea was to pump more spendable income into the economy. All right. Where is this all going here? Obama cited the payroll tax in his weekend radio and internet address Saturday when he urged Congress to work together on measures that help it, blah, 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 blah. He said, there are things we can do right now. We can cut payroll taxes again so families can have an extra $1,000 to spend. Social Security payroll taxes apply only to the first $106,000 of a worker's wages. Therefore, $2,100 is the biggest benefit anyone can gain from the one-year reduction. The great majority of Americans make less than $106,000. Millions of workers pay more in payroll taxes than in federal income taxes. So, but guess what? Representative David Camp, who's a Republican from Michigan, he says, no, can't do this. Tax reductions, no matter how well intended, will push the deficit higher, making the panel's task to reduce the deficit more difficult. Wait a minute. Weren't these the guys that said that that they can't do this end of things? But he's saying he wants more revenue. He wants to raise the taxes, not on the rich, but on the average person.
Right. Yeah. Of course. That's just par for the course.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are very consistent.
Yeah. So anyway, there is nobody out there that wants to defend. Taxes on the rich.
Yeah.
So is there anyone out there?
Anyone in power?
Yeah. Well, no, anyone out here either.
Oh, okay.
Is there anyone that wants to say, it's their money?
Right. Well, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Somebody, or there are.
Does anybody out there believe that what the Republicans say that, I actually remember now why.
What was it?
At the rally I was at yesterday. I remember why I brought that up. There was a guy who said, was I going to vote for our mayor for reelection? And I said, yeah, I was. I thought he'd been very good for the city, been particularly good for our neighborhood association and all that. So, yeah, I was going to back him. And he said, the city's going to hell in a handbasket. And, he has no plan to create jobs. I said, well, and I said, his opponent does? I said, nobody's creating jobs. Everybody says they're going to create jobs. Obama says it. Yeah. Our mayor says it.
I mean, you
kind
of have to say it.
Yeah. Rick Perry says it. Where are these jobs going to come from? Does anybody have an idea how these Republicans are going to create jobs? I got to tell you, folks, whether you like it or not, there's only one way jobs are going to be created in this country, and that's through an enormous stimulus like there was in the 1930s, that the government start hiring millions and millions of people. Don't like that? Okay. What then, folks? Cut taxes on the rich? I mean, come on. That is the Republican platform, program.
It's the way.
Yeah. So what's the deal? Can you talk to me about that? I mean, you might not be able to because
because who really has an answer to that?
Yeah, all right. Here is Kayla and Holly. Kayla, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I think we should put tax on rich, because what about poor people?
Yeah. What are you calling on? You sound like you got your Darth Vader voice distorter on. Are you with me?
I think Kayla's laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to be more concerned about the poor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Right, you're on the right track.
How are things out in Holly, Kayla? Are they any poor people out there?
Not really. We're all fine. You'll see some people on and off. We've got only one person living on the side of the road.
Oh, the side of the road.
Yeah.
Living on it. Wow, that's
well, some
terrible.
Areas are doing better than others. Well, Kayla, thank you for being our first caller.
Thanks, Kayla. The Renaissance Festival will bring some money to that area, too. And I'll be there next Sunday, as a matter of fact, all day long.
Kayla, you ever go out to that, to the Renaissance Festival?
I might.
Okay, look for Jalene.
Look for me.
Look for Jalene. She is always out and about. I don't get out and about anymore.
Yeah, you do. Way more than I ever do. Yeah, you really do.
You know, speaking of the teabaggers... Did you see this survey? They find that the Tea Party is less popular than atheists and Muslims.
I read this article, and so that, you know, and we know how unpopular because of, I hate to be mean, but ignorance that the Muslim population is because of, you know, people and their assumptions. I got into it with a guy on Facebook today. Bam, he's out of here. And
not on our Facebook page.
No, on my personal one. And atheism, well, that's always just unpopular.
But atheists.
But it's kind of hot right now, isn't it?
It is. But like a couple of years ago, remember that atheists were the least popular people in the country.
Gosh, I feel so shunned.
Well, you know what? It's like gays, because what happened was that atheists started coming out of the woodwork. And now, like the Freedom From Religion Foundation, they have campaigns all across the country with these bus signs on the sides of buses.
Oh, and billboards and things like that.
Billboards and stuff like that.
Yeah, so the baggers, so if they're so damn unpopular, how do they have so much power?
The Koch brothers giving them billions, yeah. And why do they get the press? Just because they're freaks. So
yeah,
I mean,
it's just like the gay pride parades when it's on television news, they show the drag queens in all their glory, but they never show the just kind of person in their t-shirt and jeans who are marching. You know, I mean, hey, it's entertaining. I love it. But
I was going to say, would you rather watch?
I'd rather watch them. But you know what? You know what I'm saying? It's all about the hype and the.
You got to go for imagery. You've worked in television. And
yeah, I know. If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
And if it cries, it's a great day.
That's right.
Yeah. I used to be that person.
Well, here's the deal. Robert D. Putnam, a professor of public policy at Harvard, and David E. Campbell, a political science at Notre Dame, says they have collected data indicating that the Tea Party, quote, is less popular than much maligned groups like atheists and Muslims. Campbell says the Tea Party was really an afterthought in their research. He said, we didn't go into this study to look at the Tea Party. The professors were following up on a research they conducted in 2006 and 2007, American Grace, How Religion Divides and Unites Us, and they decided to add the Tea Party and atheists to their list of survey questions. One more of their surprising findings is that the Tea Party drew a lower approval rate than Muslims and atheists. That put the Tea Party below 23 other entries, including Barack Obama, Sarah Palin, Republicans, and Democrats.
Which is amazing, considering how maligned Sarah Palin is.
Yes. By examining which respondents became supporters of the Tea Party. Now, this is, you know, this big lie that they put out. They say, we're just ordinary people, Democrats and Republicans, whites and blacks, rich people and working class people. It says, cast doubt on the Tea Party origin stories, though in fairness, early Tea Partiers were described as nonpartisan political neophytes, you know, people just beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But their findings of these two professors showed that Tea Partiers were, quote, highly partisan Republicans who were more likely than others to have contacted government officials. They are overwhelmingly white, and even compared to other white Republicans, they had a low regard for immigrants and blacks long before Barack Obama was president.
I know.
And they still do. Wow, what a surprise.
What a shocker. I'm We've known this all along. We've been throwing out the racism word for a couple of years now.
In addition to being socially conservative, the study found a close tie between religion and the Tea Party, whose supporters seek out deeply religious elected officials. You know how you can tell deeply religious elected officials?
Yeah. Well, they
get caught in an airport
caught in some
bathroom.
Kind of, yeah, they get caught in some kind of scandal. I sent you that story. Did you read that tonight? There was a pastor down south somewhere who... he's kind of a new pastor. About 2006, he came into the pastorate, and he's been raping women out back behind the church. These guys are sick.
How do we know what his political affiliation is? You want to bet?
But I don't want to lose.
as a rule, liberal theologians aren't involved in the kind of crimes that.
Creepy crimes, right. Yeah.
But here's something good. I'm really supportive of this. It shows you one reason why we ought to tax the hell out of these billionaires. But on the other hand, this is something really good. And it says Silicon Valley billionaire is funding the creation of an artificial libertarian island.
You know, Googled this so you can see a picture, everybody, the image. We should get it up. I should put a link up on Facebook.
PayPal founder and early Facebook investor Peter Thiel has given $1.25 million to an initiative to create floating libertarian countries in international water. I'm saying,
go on.
Adios, MF.
See you later. Don't let the crazy door hit you in the ass.
Yes. Thiel has been a big, I can't think of anything better. Thiel has been a big backer of the Seasteading Institute, which seeks to build sovereign nations on oil rig-like platforms. That's nice. To occupy waters beyond the reach of the law of the sea treaties. But now get this. The idea is for these countries to start from scratch, free from laws, regulations, and moral codes of any existing place. Can you say Lord of the Flies?
I mean, this is just insane.
These some bitches be eating each other.
Just have at each other.
Yeah, go
you
for
know?
It. And the language they use, they say it'd be a kind of floating Petri dish, I guess.
I mean, yeah. I don't even want to go there.
And get this. The libertarian stymied by indifference at the voting booth. The courtesy that people think you're nuts. That's why they don't vote for you. They want no welfare, looser building codes. Oh, yeah. Can you say Turkey? You know, they have a little earthquake and everything collapses.
Yeah.
No minimum wage. Wow, that's great. Good idea.
Right, yeah. So you can pay them, 50 cents an hour.
And few restrictions on weapons. So everyone will be walking around
armed,
with bazookas.
Yeah.
They will be gone. So what do you think, folks? I think any libertarian experiment like this...
like Total Recall. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where they were on that... Yeah.
It'll be Lord of the Flies with the libertarians. is there anything more?
I'll get a link up on our Facebook page.
Yeah. On the other hand, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos announced he'd be funding a clock of the long now is designed to keep ticking for 10,000 years.
Oh, well, have fun with your weirdness. Just have fun. You people are crazy.
Aren't these a couple reasons why?
To not follow them?
Yes, but also to put a little of their money back to where it came from.
Yeah. Chris wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and said, longtime listener. He's thanking us, but probably mostly you because he's been listening a long time, for never giving in and never doing the never-ending task of speaking truth to power.
Thank you,
Chris.
All right, we're going to do more of that. I'd like to include you as well. And what about that? Does anybody think we should not... A couple of questions. Does anybody think we should not tax... Yeah, you can tax them all you want. Anybody thinks we should not tax the rich really high, particularly when you start getting over, say, $5 million, up to, like, 90% by the time it gets to... You know, some of these guys...
There you go again.
$127 million and all that. That's at 90%. That's the way it used to be under Republican President Eisenhower. And the other thing is, does anybody have a clue what the Republican, program for creating jobs is?
Because we keep hearing about how they're going to do it, but.
Yeah. So join us on that. And, here's Mr. Announcer to tell you where to call.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
It's back to college. Time to learn about new things, like the fact that you can walk into a Walmart wireless center and walk out with a fully activated smartphone. Get the Sharp FX from AT&T, the HTC Wildfire S from T-Mobile, and the Samsung Continuum from Verizon. Just $28.88 each. Your new phone will work right away, which is more than we can say when you graduate with that art degree in glass blowing. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Prices with two-year new agreement are qualified two-year extension plan. Data plan required. Brand and assortment availability varies by location.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
One little fish oil pill. You know, this powerful little pill is great for your heart, that it's great for your joints. It even has powerful benefits for your skin and brain function. But the fish oils of today are sadly incomplete because they don't contain the super antioxidant power of clinically proven krill oil that can increase joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days. Until now. Introducing the free bottle giveaway of Krill Omega-3 from Purity Products, our most powerful fish oil formula ever. The only thing our advanced Krill Omega-3 fish oil is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering anyone a full-size bottle of our krill oil as part of a nationwide free trial. Just call 1-800-950-5868. To request yours, you can't go to stores. The only way to get your free bottle is to go to the phone. The number is 1-800-950-5868. Call now and claim your bottle absolutely free. 1-800-950-5868. That's 1-800-950-5868.
101-WRIF.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Is it time for a new roof? Call Sears Roofing. You can save $500 if you call right now. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Get your roofing job done right. Call Sears Roofing now. You can save $500. Call now. 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled. All with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief. Managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans.
Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. And we're asking people, what do you think about taxing the rich? Apparently, nobody disagrees with that. I guess 5%. I think sometimes the views I've had probably represents about 5% of the population. So I don't want to write off those people. Yes, I do. In this case.
Completely? Okay.
Anyways, in this poll of 55,000 people online, 95% of the people that responded said they agreed with Warren Buffett that that we had to stop coddling billionaires. Tax the rich.
Yeah, he spoke out in the New York Times. So
and also...
And Alexander wrote in to calltalkyes at yahoo.com. Yahoo.com said, why don't the rich pay any taxes exactly? Just Bush tax cuts or...
Well, there's all these tax deductions. And, but, well, you know what? Like I said, I want to turn more of this over to you. Why don't the rich pay more taxes than they do? So...
That's your homework assignment.
Yeah.
Give us an answer.
Yes.
Whatever it may be.
313-298-WRIF. Also, if you're a Republican and you think that Barack Obama is not doing a good job, and all these Republicans, everybody is, you know, of every political stripe is saying they're going to create jobs. How are the Republicans going to create jobs?
Yeah, because maybe you spend more time watching the Fox News than us. And they have all the answers, right? No.
That's right.
I joined this group, by the way, about Fox News. It says they should add a laugh track. Perfect, right?
I love it. All right, here's John in Detroit. John, thanks for being our first caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter. I'm going to just talk real quick. What I wanted to say is I don't believe that the wealthy will ever create jobs, and the corporations will ever create jobs until they're required to start having a vested interest in this country, because that's what they no longer view themselves as having anymore.
Right.
So I'm going to let you go, and you have a good
night. All right. Well, thank you very much. And by the way, one thing we didn't say about General Electric when we were talking earlier, how they paid no taxes on $5.1 billion of income, and they're moving this plant that's been in Wisconsin for 115 years, that the majority of their profits now come from overseas. So John is absolutely right.
Yeah.
That these companies have absolutely no loyalty to the United States. You know, you may wave a flag and talk about U.S. number one. They could care less.
Yeah. You're not even a blip on their radar.
That's right. All right. Here is Richard and Wayne. Hey, Richard, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. Good to speak to you.
Thanks.
First, I want to say I agree with raising taxes on the rich, but it shouldn't be as high as you're saying. I think that taking anything more than 50% is just wrong.
How come?
You know, because that's considered pandering. That's something that, you know, a pimp would do to a prostitute. You know, you're going out there and you're working for them. That's just wrong. And, you know, I don't feel anybody should be taxed or be forced to hand over more than half of their earnings.
Okay.
And, yeah. Fair.
And also what you were saying about how Republicans were wanting to allow the payroll taxes to increase.
Right.
You know, but what I understand about that payroll tax, and I believe you said it, is that that extra 2%, I believe, it was going towards Social Security.
Right.
That was a Social Security tax. So I would be in favor of letting that tax reduction expire because that money would go directly back into Social Security. And then at the same time, raise the ceiling for Social Security, say up to $500,000 or $1 million.
How about no ceiling on it at all?
I wouldn't say that, not that high, but like have reduced rates. Like for people making over $150,000, they pay, you know, a couple percentage points less. People over $10 million pay a few percentage points less. You know, so it's sort of like, you know, tax rates are set in reverse. The more money you make, the less you have to pay into Social Security because the less you're going to need it. But everybody, you know, we got to find ways to pump more money into it instead of just cutting benefits.
You got it, Richard. All right. Thank
Thanks,
you very much.
Richard.
Appreciate it. Although I still think we ought to take the cap off of, because once you make like $106,000, you stop paying into Social Security and Medicare. So if you make $127 million a year, and some people do, you only pay on the first $106,000 of it.
Yeah, that's to me, criminal.
Yeah. Here's Ed. He's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hey, Ed, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Pretty
hey,
good.
Ed. Thanks for calling from Buffalo.
Well, I'm a truck driver, and, you know, from Buffalo, New York, Detroit and Buffalo have kind of the same thing in common, pretty poor cities.
Sure.
We actually got a business owner in Buffalo who could have taken his business overseas but did not want to leave, did not want cheap manufacturing made in another country. So he kept it there and paying a little more in taxes. But what I want to say is I would raise the tax on the rich, yes, okay? But if they actually create jobs and pump money back into their economy, then you start giving them a tax break. That's
yeah.
what I, and I think it works out for everybody.
But the question is, how are they going to do that?
Well, yeah, and the problem is that, of course, and I'm sure you realize this, right now there's no incentive to create jobs or to expand business because people are holding back on purchasing either because they're worried or because they just don't have the wherewithal, right?
Well, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but in San Francisco, they actually brought over on ships people from China and the materials from China because it's cheaper. Are you guys aware of that?
No, I'm not quite sure what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, look, as a few months ago, this was between the Democrats and Republicans both agreed
yeah.
to save $400 million on cost and labor. They brought over Chinese workers on big vessels overseas and brought the material to finish up the east side of the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, that's the problem in our country right now. We're too eager to cut costs.
Well, yeah, and always the easiest part of it all to cut is labor. Everything else is kind of fixed costs. I mean, it's what they, you know, as I've always said in talking about this, our labor is what they call variable capital. You can get it for different prices. So you can, even on unionized jobs, like in auto production, you can get somebody's making $28,000 a year doing assembly work, and right next to them is a material handler that now there's like a third tier is making like $10 an hour. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Although, Jolene, if you could, or well, maybe, you know what? We're trying to get the listeners to do more of the work for us since we're kind of layabouts. So would somebody look that up and see if what Ed said? I'm sorry, Ed. It's not that I'm doubting you. It sounded a little shaky.
I've never heard of it, but that doesn't mean at all that
yeah.
it didn't happen.
So you got to, you know, the...
Let's have a resource.
News sites. I should have asked. It was my fault. I should have asked Ed for, you know,
well, you can if you want to get on the
yeah.
computer, Ed. Call techyes@yahoo.com.
call back or, he's driving. Don't do it while you're
or
driving.
Or there's Harold, who's my producer. Yeah.
But listen, so someone looked this up. This is Chinese workers working on the Golden Gate Bridge. This sounds doubtful to me. One of the ways you might start is go to Snopes, SNOPES.com.
I was thinking Snopes while I was hearing it, but again, it's not like...
Because these things circulate on the internet and what have you.
And people take it for... being real.
Yeah. Here's Max in Detroit. Max, hi. It's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
Click.
What? Oh, I didn't do it. Sorry. let me try that again. Hi, Max. It's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for calling.
So I had an idea for getting companies to reinvest in the country, and that is to raise corporate taxes. I heard that, post-World War II era, that the government's revenue base was around 30% came from corporations, and that now it's closer to 6%, and that's money we can't draw from.
It's about 80% of it is personal taxes.
Yeah.
So, when these guys... Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I interrupted you. You go ahead.
I heard that these... taxing these corporations encouraged them to reinvest in their own companies, building factories and hiring workers so that they didn't have to pay that tax, and it would just encourage the infrastructure of the United States. And that's we've been living off of that, but we haven't been reinvesting in it.
Well, as I said, when these tax cuts came down the pike, there was nothing really worth investing in terms of return on their investment, which, of course, is all that they think about. They don't think about this country. They don't think about their state or their nation or their community or anything like that. They think about what kind of return on investment can you get. And given the nature of the system and the lack of restrictions on investment capital, that's understandable. So they didn't do it. And people right now, no one's going to create more jobs by giving the wealthy more money. The only way it's going to do it...
They're just going to get more money.
Yeah. One of the things that I was asking, and I put that out there because, Republicans say, no, we don't want the government spending more money, that people on the left, Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman says that there has to be this multi-billion, even trillion-dollar stimulus. In other words, the government has to act as it did in the 1930s. Capitalism then was down the tubes. And if it hadn't been for what they call Keynesian economics, named after John Maynard Keynes, who said that capitalism, modern capitalism, can only continue to function if it has its pump primed by government spending. And so that's what's necessary right now, unless, and here the Republicans would say, no, that's terrible, we don't want to do that, it's going to make things worse and all that. Well, where do you get the money? Well, you get the money from taxing the rich and taxing the corporations properly. But if they, not you, but if they, Max, think that, no, that's a terrible idea, I want to hear their idea. And like I said, I'm not going to give them any big argument or anything like that. All right, thanks for your call. 313-298-WRIF.
Yeah, there was a pretty good breakdown in the Free Press today about taxing the rich. There was a huge few pages. I would recommend it. Kind of lays it all out on if they taxed this certain population this much, it could cover this much as far as, schools and roads and things like that. But freep.com, if anyone wants to look at that. Huh. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I think it's, wait a minute. Thank you, Athena or Sarah. We didn't even give them proper credit. They're answering the phones at 313-298-WRIF.
Yeah.
And she has put on this, I'll have to look it up during the break because it's this enormous.
On the screen, what did she put?
URL. Well, it's businessinsider.com, china-construction.sanfrancisco.
Yeah, there's someone sent something from the Telegraph. And
what's it say?
All I can get.
So Ed was right.
All I can get is it says new San Francisco bridge built in China to be shipped to U.S.
Okay.
So it's built in China from what I see. I can't get the article to pull up.
All right. Here is Willie in Farmington Hills. Hi, Willie. You're on the air. Welcome. Welcome, but I think you might need a new phone too, man. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I hear a little noise.
You know, it's terrible here.
Yeah.
You know, Willie, what
try
I got to do.
Try calling right back.
Yeah, we have open lines. In fact, let me try this first. I'm going to put you on hold. And wow, yeah, that was awful. And maybe phone screeners can grab that, so I'm sorry. But that
call
was
right back.
Undoable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's Fred in Detroit. Fred, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter and Jolene.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, first off, I'm going to say that, you know, of course, Republicans have no plans for jobs. There is nothing that they can conceivably come up with. And anybody and everybody with at least half a brain is going to take some stimulus spending. We have a ton of infrastructure work all across this country that needs to get done.
Indeed. Yeah, absolutely. You caught me in mid-swallow of some water there.
What I'm dying to know is what kind of rules and regulations some of these so-called business people think they have inflicted on them. That, I mean, I heard some guy on the news today beg Obama, and it's whatever state he was in, to not hit it with more regulations. I'm like, what regulations?
As far as, well, like, environmental?
Well, there are. And, you know,
I mean, just everything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, you may have seen that now with the Republican candidates, they're all bashing the Environmental Protection Agency, who was, now, what left-wing president signed that into being? Oh, it was Nixon. Nixon. That's right. Anyway, so they say it's a symbol of heavy-handed regulatory agenda that the Obama administration is posing. Now, the latest thing that the heavy-handed Obama administration wants to do is stop all of us from getting poisoned by what's spewing out of these utility companies. And so, and Fred, you've listened for a long time, so you've heard this refrain from me before. They're using the companies, these utility corporations, the Koch brothers, by the way, deeply entrenched in that. They're saying if these pollution rules are go into being, that will lead to higher electricity costs because, you know what, they're going to charge us more. They're going to pass the cost of them not poisoning us onto us.
And they want to stay right where they are. They don't want to go down ever, right?
In other words, part of their profile of profitability comes from their continuing poisoning of the environment and us. So they want to say, well, we want to keep having the same return on our investment if we're forced to stop poisoning the planet. Now,
they could save some money if they stop running all these oil and natural gas commercials telling us how good they are for
us. I know. How about the ones where the clean coal, and they show this, you know, person breathing this big, deep breath out in nature. It's like, oh, don't give us that line of crap.
All right, Fred, thank you very much. Appreciate you calling. We're going to take a break. Come back. I'll tell you what we've got coming at 1 a.m., a couple of interesting interviews.
And more on this China thing.
More on this China thing.
More.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Hi, I'm Will Elias, the short sale expert with Elias Realty. No matter who I speak to about a short sale, everyone has the same three questions. How this will affect their taxes, and if they'll owe any debt, how this will affect their credit, and they want to know if they can buy another home. By now, you should have heard the commercials with Derek Spilak and Tammy Alola telling their story about how I sold their homes for $100,000 less than what they owed without owing any taxes and their debt. Gone. Derek is now in a $200,000 home in South Lyon, and Tammy is in her new home on 5 acres in Pinckney. If you owe more than your house is worth, what are you waiting for? All the government short sale programs and the IRS tax forgiveness expire at the end of 2012. That means you have to sell your home before the end of 2012. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. If you want out of your upside-down home and into the home of your dreams, pick up the phone and call me right now for a free consultation. 877-CALL-WILL. 877-CALL-WILL. Again, that's 877-CALL-WILL.
Right now, homes are more affordable than they've been in decades. And Quicken Loans has a mortgage program that will help you buy that perfect home. Call Quicken Loans right now. They can even introduce you to a local real estate agent that can guide you through the process step by step. With more than 25 years of helping American homeowners, Quicken Loans makes the process as easy as possible. With a streamlined approach and proactive updates, they provide you with the certainty you need to search for the home of your dreams. And highly trained Quicken Loan specialists are standing by, ready to help you take advantage of this incredible mortgage opportunity. So give Quicken Loans a call now. Call 888-249-1425. Find out how much home you can afford. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need. Now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
What do you see yourself doing a few years from now? Thinking about a career is one thing, but preparing for a career is what really counts. If an education in information technology, electronics technology, or drafting and design could help you prepare, then check out the technology-focused programs offered at ITT Technical Institute. Call ITT Tech at 800-741-5123. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Classes in day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So if you want to prepare for a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education. Get started by calling ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to our second hour. Thanks for joining us on America's Most Radical Talk Show. I never said that before. You think that's true?
I think some people think it is.
Yeah. Anyway, but we're still up for a good laugh.
We are. Yeah. I want to thank Eric and Brian and Harold, because we got some articles about this bridge that, the San Francisco bridge.
Ed, who is listening, is a truck driver from Buffalo. He was saying that this bridge.
Oh, it's the New Bay Bridge.
In San Francisco was being built by Chinese labor.
Yeah.
In the U.S.
It was built in Shanghai. Yeah. And then from what I read from the New York Times, which I going to trust this. The assembly work in California will be done by Americans. So,
yeah. Well, by the way, you can join us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com if you'd prefer to email us, although we'd like to hear from you at 313-298-9743. And join us on Facebook, also facebook.com/nightcall. And thanks to Athena and Sarah, who will be posting our podcast by noon now today. Yeah, it's Monday. At 1 a.m., I'm going to be replaying an interview I recorded a little couple days ago. I don't know. Anybody ever heard that song? I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night. As long as
I've got nothing.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
But what's it about, Peter?
Google it. Okay. Joe Hill, well, here it says, the man who never died, the lifetimes and legacy of Joe Hill, American labor icon. And this was this guy that was executed in Utah in 1915 for murder. But he was this big songwriter, and he influenced like Bob Dylan. I mean, you know, 50 years later, what have you. Also, believe it or not, can you imagine a little town in California, Boron, California, where there was this union of 600 men and women who mined for, what is it, borax, I guess it is, and this enormous multinational mining company, Rio Tinto, decided they're going to blow them off, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm giving this away, but they won.
Oh.
And, I mean, it's... sort of a model for what we can do, because we can fight the big boys and win. All right. What?
I just want to say there's something pretty disturbing on our Facebook page right now. So we don't censor necessarily, but
yes, we do.
To this person. Well, this time this is bad because it's just really inappropriate.
Yeah.
So this person will be sorry, yeah. But bye-bye.
Debbie, if you're listening, take it off.
I'm doing it right now.
Oh, you can do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now here, the San Francisco bridge that's being built in China is almost done, and they're going to ship. And this gives you an idea of what we're talking about when we're talking about variable capital, labor, what our labor sells for on the market. And remember, the function of unions, the function of the minimum wage, is to artificially raise the selling price of labor. Because when libertarians talk about a free market, you're talking about making $2 an hour, because you know, there's competition in all of that. And so what's going to happen, China will send the final four segments of the new Oakland Bay Bridge 6,500 miles to California next month as the 2,000-foot project enters its final phase. China, a savvy, confident bidder of construction and engineering projects throughout the world, is now bringing that experience to bear on the U.S. Remember when people used to chant USA, number one, number one? According to the Guardian of England, five of the world's top contractors in terms of revenue are now Chinese, with the likes of China State Construction Engineering Group, overtaking established American giants like Bechtel. This is absolutely amazing. CSCEC has already built seven schools in the U.S. Apartment blocks in Washington, D.C. and New York. It is in the middle of building a 4,000-room casino in Atlantic City. And in New York, it has won contracts to renovate the subway system, build a new metro platform near Yankee Stadium, and refurbish the Alexander Hamilton Bridge over the Harlem River.
Well, nothing's more American than that.
You know what? Like, you know, when we come out of, what's that top 10 program we come out of? What's the name of it? With
Nikki Sixx's show?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, but stick a fork in us, folks. We're done.
Really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you know, we're done as long as we're going to let the elites determine things. And it's what I always say. And you say, what am I supposed to do? You got these billionaires running everything, politicians being bought off, everything going to the cheapest bidder. I'm just sitting here in my home. What can I do? Well, we better figure it out, folks. We're screwed now. We just got to start doing damage control for openers. We got to start neutralizing these people. How do we do it? I don't know, but we got to figure it, folks. Chinese engineering companies have several things going for them. Financing from the state government. They transfer Chinese workers who work much more cheaply. That's inside of China. And they do not use the Chinese labor here, but you know, our labor will still be soon working for all of that. They use construction machinery built in China. Because of the large profit margin, they hire globally renowned architects to demonstrate they can deliver better designs for anyone. The main barrier to full Western expansion, I mean, like a total takeover, I guess, is seen as cultural. but likely something the Chinese will master with time and experience while doing business in the U.S. Now, China saved $400 million by going with Chinese workers who make $12 an hour. Oh, no, no. I'm sorry.
Wait,
$12 a day.
Oh, my God.
$12 a day, toiling from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days a week, and sleep in a company dorm room. Well, that's what they're going to be expecting of us soon. They're going to say, you know that phrase they always say, we got to be competitive? Well, this is what we're competing with, folks. And as the Chinese workers start to organize, and I've reported on this, you may have seen it yourself, they're beginning to shut down industries, they have strikes and what have you, and there's enough room as there was in American industry. Like, there was no need to screw generation after generation of American workers up till the 1930s and make them work for, you know, terrible wages, no safety conditions, no weekends, and all of that. There was, the money was there to pay people decently, but they figure, why should we? Okay, $400 million estimated savings for cheap Chinese labor, but is it a pure savings, this asks. You think about all the unemployment, it's saying, in California, higher than the original. So this is what we're facing, folks. All right, let's get back to our phones. I'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Willie in Farmington Hills. Let's see how your connection is now. Go ahead.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, oh, Willie, you sound like a million bucks.
Yeah, you're doing great. You're doing great.
Just a quick comment on Warren Buffett's statement.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's rich, and he knows how he got rich. And anyone who's as rich as he is, been around for a while, they know how to stimulate the economy. And the trickle-down theory hasn't worked in a while, not even since Reagan, I believe. And my suggestion is that you raise taxes on the top 2%, stimulate the economy with maybe a large infrastructure program or something like that. Cut waste in some social programs, or maybe if they're going to do anything with Social Security, I don't think that they should reform it like Paul Ryan is talking about.
Oh.
I think that was ridiculous. You know, turn us right back over to insurance companies and all of that with this, you know, with this voucher. To me, that's ridiculous. If the Republicans have a plan, I will be sitting. If they have a plan to create jobs, I will be sitting in front of the TV with popcorn with both of my ears, and will probably borrow somebody else's ear, because there's nothing left with the Republicans except the trickle-down theory.
Well, you know, Willie, you're absolutely right. And what I'm wondering is the Republican objection to what you're saying. That is, revenue from the upper 2% increased dramatically, and then a huge multi-billion dollar, maybe even trillion dollar government spending program to put people back to work, repair the infrastructure, everything you've said. But I want to hear, and no one has come up with this, and I was going to give them
too hard of a time.
I wouldn't give them a bad time at all. But I want to say, okay, they're going to say, oh, that's terrible. It's going to create debt. And so then I want to hear, and we'll, you know, I'll join you in the popcorn. I'll just sit back and listen to them. But we haven't got anyone to call in yet, because you know what? I don't think there's anything there.
Exactly. There's nothing left.
Yeah. All right, Willie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us at 313-298-WRIF. And, here's a good idea. John, hi, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Hey, Peter. I'm calling actually from Detroit. I just pulled into, I'm a truck driver too.
Okay.
Still holler.
Okay.
But anyway, I got an idea. Everyone keeps calling and they're crying about the stimulus or there's no jobs, this and that. There are jobs. The problem is they're low paying jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now hear this plan. What the government did wrong when they gave the big banks of Wall Street the bailout money. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of those banks have paid it back. But if they didn't, when they do pay it back, what the government needs to do is, we should all agree on the fact that most people that bought houses in the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
they were forced to pay the price that they're paying. So why not do something like this? I'll give you an idea. Let's say I bought a house for $200,000.
Okay.
It's really only worth $100,000. My tax code says it's worth $100,000. So why not create three-voucher system where you'd have a realtor come in and tell you what it is. The bank sends their appraiser out, and the state sends out theirs, or county, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You take the three vouchers into back to the bank that services your loan, and pretty much they probably sold it to a secondary market like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Let's say the $200,000, they agree that it's worth $100,000. Now you refinance that house at 30 years, 5%, $100,000.
Yeah.
So your note just went from $800 down to whatever, $500.
I like this idea.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, John.
Let's do this tomorrow.
You, when you're driving by yourself, you got a lot of time for thinking. You've been thinking creatively, and that's excellent. The problem is, and I'm sure you realize this, it's not for a lack of good ideas, because, I mean, that's essentially what we need, is people like yourself, you know, people like everybody, sitting around and thinking, what's best for us? What's best for the community? What's best for our country? But that's not who is at the helm. And, you know, you could find any number of think tanks, and if you're doing that intricate thinking, maybe you ought to take your truck and drive into one of these think tanks and say, hey, give me a job, because you're doing okay. They're not any smarter than you, that's for sure. But you know what I'm saying? It's a political question, and there right now is no political will to get off the dime and do anything creative, like you're suggesting.
But if they did, now, just hear this out. It all turns back to jobs and creation.
No, I hear you.
If I'm now working, let's say I was working at Ford or whatever, and I was making $20 an hour.
Right.
I lost my job. Now, I got a wife and a baby, so I'm going to go work. Let's say I have to, you know, see, I got a degree in accounting and stuff, and I drive a steel truck.
Okay.
Because I'm stuck out in the country. I can't sell my house because it's only worth $75,000, and I owe $140,000 on the note.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in arrears. Now, I could do the easy way out and file bankruptcy like, you know, millions of people did and try and get out that way, or find another job, bust my butt, and make it happen. Now, let's say I could find another job in another part of the state or whatever. I still can't go to that job unless I sell that house to move up there. So I'm always going to lose. Now, here's the thing. If I'm working for $20 an hour,
yeah,
and I take a job at $10 an hour, and then my wife goes and works and she makes $8 an hour, we're still $2 or whatever short of what we used to live on to make that note happen, and any discretionary income was the extra money that I used to make now that I lost. So that's why the economy has stalled. And then what the credit card companies did is they knew people are borrowing on their cards, and I know you got millions of listeners probably telling you this. You know, I had a $5,000 credit card. I get it down to $3,000, and all of a sudden the bank drops it down to $3,100. So every time you would pull my credit, it looks as though I'm fully maxed out on debt.
Wait. Listen, we're going on with this too long. You've got it. You know, there's an old Bob Dylan line. You got a head full of ideas that are driving you insane.
No, but yeah, he's
there's good. He's on to something.
A lot of thinking. You know, he's.
But we got to get some
planning.
Other callers.
Yeah.
All right, John. Thank you. Appreciate all this. Send me some email too. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Write
and
that all out.
On that note, Tim in Georgia wrote, "Tripoli at this moment is falling."
Wow. Oh, yeah. We haven't looked at
it's the same kind of thing, but more of the celebrating in Green Square.
Yeah. Let me see here. I don't know if things have changed any. Yeah, it says we hear at Yahoo News, Libyan rebels take most of Tripoli.
Yeah.
Euphoric Libyan rebels took control of most of Tripoli in a lightning advance Sunday, celebrating the victory in Green Square, the symbolic heart of the Gaddafi regime. His defenders quickly melted away as his 42-year-old rule crumbled.
See you later, Frizzhead.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying.
Adios, MF.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so what's going to be there now? This is going to be very interesting.
It will be.
Yeah. All right, back to our phones, and I want to hear this. Here's Josh in Garden City, how the Republicans are going to create jobs. Let me hear it.
Hey, Peter and Julian, good to talk to you.
Hi, okay. Josh.
But when we were talking about jobs, they weren't talking about you or me because we don't matter. They ignore us. They were talking about jobs for them.
Oh.
You know, if the rich people making money,
okay,
you know, then they get their kickbacks, money to run again, and then they get in power, And they weren't talking about us. No.
See, this makes sense, Peter.
I know, but I like the call, Josh, and I appreciate it. But I got to say, I'm just a tad disappointed because I thought it was actually
a Republican.
Someone
actually was going to have something.
Was going
to
tell us how the Republicans really intend to create jobs, or how they say they're not going to. But at least, what do they say? I don't know.
Well, that's what they say. They say it point blank to us, and just people aren't thinking that. They're not thinking of us. They're thinking of them and their buddies.
Sure.
They're not thinking of us.
I know. And when they talk about justice, they mean just us.
Just us.
All right. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, see, that's the only kind of answer we can get is a joke, because it is a joke.
Isn't there a single Republican out there? There's a few thoughtful, moderate Republicans left. I mean, they're cowering in fear in their own party because it's just run by nuts. But there's got to be somebody. All right, so how are we going to create jobs? Come on, Republican. I swear to you, we will not give you a hard time or argue with you. So this is like Republicans,
like
teabaggers,
forum.
Libertarians, when you're not going off to your little artificially created islands where we're hoping you'll go. By the way, let me just, some of you I know are ex-military or current military, and one of the inducements to re-upping and, you know, re-signing was that after 20 years that you'd be eligible for retirement at half their salary. And this was kind of, like etched in stone. Well, guess what? Republicans are talking not just about cutting Social Security and Medicare, but a Pentagon study says that the military pensions are no longer untouchable. They say they're unaffordable. I mean, there's like $1 trillion being spent on preparation for war, giving this all to these military contractors that rob the taxpayer blind and all that. But they are talking about turning over the retirement fund to a 401k-style plan with government contributions. And then, but now, rather than say you go in and, you know, you're 19 and you come out when you're 39 and you can get that, you'd have to wait till you're 65.
Wow.
So, I mean, one of the things when you hear the Republicans talking to military and our boys and always.
They don't support them when they come home. They want them to go and die for lies, and then they take everything away from them. Oh, God, it's just disgusting. On our Facebook page, Peter, Jay wrote in, he said, I think they should put a tax on having children. When the child turns 21, the tax drops off. Everyone, I like this one because I don't have kids, I'm tired of getting like punished for not having them or not getting any kind of, you know, what they get. Everyone I know with children gets a big tax return every year, and all the single people get robbed of that, and the older people also. The people with children use the schools and should have to pay those teachers, help pay for those teachers, then lower the property tax of those who do not use the schools. Jay, I'm with you.
I'm not. I mean, you know, those are those kids, even if we don't have any.
Yeah.
Not you and I. I mean,
right.
You and I don't have any kids.
No.
And neither do my wife and I.
Right.
Geez, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? Think of it.
We're not polyamorous.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've sort of totally even lost what I was going to say.
Well,
all right, here, let's go on. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Russell in Canton. Hi, Russell. You're on the air.
Hey,
hi.
Long time listener. Love to get a show.
Well, thank you, Russell.
Kind of got me off the subject of what I want to talk about, but thing is, I know a guy that went to Iraq and came back, and he is, you know, physically messed up. Now he can walk and stuff, but he's got shoulder problems, this and that, and they basically forced him to retire. And now they keep throwing up excuses. They won't pay him.
See?
So he's basically not getting any money from them at all, but he's retired.
This is what I'm talking about. Yeah. And these politicians and this all support the troops. This is called supporting the troops. They're full of crap.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you left it to the American people and say, how should we treat these men and women that have come home from Iraq with these grievous injuries? And, I mean, I forgot what it is. It's something like 150,000 people with closed head injuries.
Yeah, and post-traumatic stress disorder.
And if you ask the American people, what should these men and women get? I think it would start with an E. Everything.
Yeah.
You know, whereas about trying to, you know, how can we cut back on this and cut back on that? But what do you do? You did have something to say, Russell, about creating jobs. What was that?
Yes. I mean, more of a question, I guess, is do you think that, you know, hey, if they can't do anything as far as these, you know, companies leaving the country and stuff because obviously it's cheaper for labor and they most likely can ship it in here,
you know, because it's built, you know, cheaper and shipped in here for nothing because of NAFTA and all that. Well, why not just, you know, raise the tariffs so they have to pay outrageous amount of tax to ship it in here and then, you know, or eliminate NAFTA and force them to build and make jobs here to be just cost-effective as, you know, shipping it overseas or whatever.
Well, sure, and that's what the function of tariff walls were, you know, when they were in place. And, of course, that's not what they're going to do. They want this international flow of capital to go unrestricted, and that's not just NAFTA. I mean, that's, you know, dictates what goes on between our three countries in North America, but also there's like the World Trade Organization, and if you try to put a tariff on anything, another country can bring you in front of this, essentially in front of a commission, and you know, that you can be fined. So right now, there were things that were tariff wars that didn't work out real well, but ultimately, keeping things local worked well for everyone. And because they wouldn't have the penetration of all the products that have essentially destroyed American industries, like steel. And here, I mean, shipping in whole bridges. Can you imagine how cheaply these people must work?
Oh.
And, I mean, we have...
And the bridge is sitting in a big warehouse.
Yeah. And oftentimes people have contempt for these low-wage workers that are taking, quote, our jobs. But imagine what their life must be like, working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for, you know, I don't even know what it comes out, about $1 an hour or something like that. And if you go back and read American history and read how American industrial workers worked in the 1830s and 1840s and into almost into the 1930s, their lives were essentially ruined by forced industrial work.
Yeah, or they lost their lives.
Yeah,
because of lack of regulation.
And if it wasn't for government intervention to say, hey, look, you got to pay people a decent wage. Hey, you got to let people join unions. That would be the condition. We would be living like Chinese workers now, and it's going the other way. They're starting to creep up some. We're starting to go down the other way. So it's.
Yeah. One quick thing, too, is to think about is a guy gave me an example. He said, if you look at the history like the Roman Empire and what we have now, it's just, you know, shockingly similar of what, you know, how they rose and fall. It's kind of the same thing going on here.
Just because we have in this state a little under 10% unemployment and rich women are buying high-heeled shoes for $1,500. Yeah, that's the way it is. All right. Thank you, Russell. Thank you so much for calling. Some open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF. You know, I never got to talk about sports. We just started talking about the Tigers in first place, and they just squeaked out an incredible game. Today, was it, or yesterday? I can't remember.
Yesterday. I went to my very first Tigers game last Monday at Comerica Park.
Really?
They lost, but it was a great time.
Did they sing, Comerica, by the way, folks, is a bank here. And in the seventh inning, they sing God Bless Comerica.
I didn't hear the song.
No?
No. Did they really? No, Peter.
Do you know that there's...
Don't even start with me. It's not in the dictionary. All right.
The thing I wanted to, the very disturbing what's been happening at American sports. I mean, there's always been great rivalries and all that between different cities. We see it now between like Boston and New York and all that.
People get heated about this
stuff.
But
now people are starting to, you know, like beat the crap out of people like that happened in Los Angeles. A guy was put in a coma. Now two men fighting for their lives after a bloody 49ers-Raiders game violence yesterday. And one was shot, one was beaten so bad he's in a coma. And a 24-year-old man who was wearing a F the Niners t-shirt was shot 2 to 4 times in the stomach before... And then he goes on. Another man in his 20s was shot about 20 minutes earlier and had superficial face injuries, but then he was taken to the same hospital where they... But there's someone else. Like, this is printing so light. But...
Well, the point is, it's now, they say, don't talk about religion and politics. Now you can't talk about religion, politics, Or sports.
And, you know, I don't know. This has always been present in European sports, particularly in football, soccer.
Football.
And it was what they call soccer hooligans or football hooligans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was heavily organized among the working class by these fascist groups, these neo-Nazi
really?
Groups.
Wow.
Yeah. And they would get into these enormous brawls that people really injured badly. And mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, one thing, it's just sort of male aggression. But what just seeing this, and this could be just coincidental, but as things start to get nuttier in this country and people feel more frustrated and people feel more impotent, that is unable to alter what's happening to them in our country and our community, well, then all of a sudden these, you know, these things like somebody wearing a sports shirt. I mean, would you really care if someone, you know, had a T-shirt that said "F the Tigers"?
No.
You go. I go. Wow. You actually paid money for that?
Like you actually are wearing that? First of all,
oh,
really?
All right. I'm getting excited. I'm getting excited. This one says "Jobs and Republicans."
Is there hope? Is there hope? Okay.
And it's Mike in Grand Rapids, a heavy Republican area
okay.
in Michigan. Mike, you're on the air. Go
Hello.
Ahead.
Hey.
Hi.
I just want to talk. You said that Republicans are trying to create. You were wondering what Republicans are trying to do to create jobs.
Yeah.
Well, what they're going to do.
I just, it was my understanding that Republicans don't necessarily want to create jobs. It's the Democrats that do. You know, I mean, the Republicans want the jobs to be made from the businesses. You know, I mean, that was just my understanding. I just wanted to call in and say that much about it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that remark. Disappointed again. Come on. Is there not a single Republican out there?
Not looking
Is there
good.
Not a tea bagger out there? I'll even call you Tea Party member if you,
we'll be,
if you call
We
in.
Will.
We will
we'll
be
do
polite.
That
we'll be
once.
Respectful. And we will. How about this? We won't even try to refute you. But here's what you got to say. Okay. Here is the Republican program for creating jobs.
Lay it out for us.
Now, we know the tax reduction thing hasn't worked because he had the Bush tax cuts and everything's gone to hell in a handbasket began under him. And, you know, we're not pumping it up for Barack Obama. I mean, he has been inadequate to the task of solving the problem. But all the Republicans, what they say is we're going to create jobs. And either you may, you know, if you watch Fox News or you watch that comedy show, what the Republican...
Colbert Report?
No, the Republican debate is what I meant. Remember what? They had the debate
in... Like, I don't know that show. Oh, that show.
In your home state.
Yeah, Iowa. Ugh.
Yeah, so there's got to be someone out there that either knows that here's what they're going to do, right? I mean, I don't know what you could throw it back on me that what's Barack Obama going to do. I'm not quite sure. He says at least he's going to announce what he's going to do.
Yeah, please do.
And if it's not a $1 trillion stimulus, well, I don't know what it is. And if you think that's a real bad idea, then what do? Because things are starting to really spiral downward. I mean, the stock market...
I think it's crickets because no one has an idea. Of
yeah, the stock market's down 16% during the last month. And the stock... Well, don't even get me started on the stock market.
Okay.
Hey, there's some open lines for you, and Chet and Shane and Bill will be right back to you.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Homeowners, how do you find the right contractor when you want something built? How do you find the best service professional when you need something fixed? For any type of service for your home, go to the most trusted website for pre-screened home pros. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource that instantly connects you with pre-screened remodelers, maids, repairmen, and many other home contractors. If you need a plumber, electrician, painter, or any other home pro, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the smartest way to find neighbor-rated contractors in your area. Over 10 million homeowners have trusted Service Magic for their home improvement and maintenance projects. So hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Yes. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. It's our last segment, so do give us a call at that number. Thanks, Tony, for sending in this article. He says, sad to see tax cuts creating more wealth for the rich. He said, I've been listening since you started. Well, gee, you, like me, must be in your late 40s.
Is there more?
Yeah, okay. Actually, here is what he... This is absolutely astounding. I don't know why I didn't see this. This was Friday, August 19th. Members of the UAW, the United Auto Workers, have rejected American Axle demand for a new contract concessions, prompting the big supplier to move to close one of its last factories in the U.S. permanently. The company announced during a flurry of meetings that it was very difficult but necessary business decision to close the company's plant in Chickatawawa. Let me see. I can say that. Cheektowaga, New York, by next year. And shifts in the market demand towards more fuel-efficient passenger cars. What are they talking about?
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
American, my, you know.
Yeah. In the future, American Axle plans to depend on plants in Mexico to make components for vehicles built by customers. Efforts to reach a fair labor agreement between UAW workers and American Axle have been thwarted by the company's unwillingness to negotiate a fair agreement with a livable wage for 66 workers at the company's plant in New York. Wow, that's amazing. I'm stuttering, I'm stammering because I'm just so angry for these people.
Yeah, and we've talked to people on the show who called in back before.
Yeah, when there was plant.
When there was still a plant.
American Axle plant here. Mm-hmm. So here it is, folks. This is capitalist blackmail. And it's what I said. Either make all these concessions to this company that is already enormously profitable, or they're going to, you know, close your plant. I mean, I'm actually surprised that the UAW didn't roll over, because now all these people have lost their jobs. So it's what they come to you and say, okay, you're making $28 an hour. We want second tier, 14. We want material handlers to work at $10 an hour. Okay, well, now we're going to start having new hires come in at $10. Oh, you don't want to let people work for $10 an hour? Well, I guess we're going to move our plant somewhere. Okay, well, now we're going to start a second or fourth or ninth tier at $8 an hour.
Right.
And it keeps going lower and lower and lower and lower. And this is what happened before the unions came in. Right now, the unions do not have the power, because in another era, they couldn't take their workers somewhere else. So when there was like the sit-in strikes in the late 1930s up in Flint and here in Detroit, the manufacturers were screwed. I mean, the workers were occupying their plant.
Yeah.
They were withholding their labor, and workers had power. Now we don't have a lot of power. So,
right. Chris wrote to CallTalkYes at Yahoo.com. The rich do not pay taxes, in great part because corporations are people. Big money has managed to twist legislation and code to the point that they are not exposed to payroll taxes.
Okay. And, well, yeah, because we, and none of you, I mean, that's one answer, but someone had written in earlier asking how are these American companies able to get away without paying taxes. All right, let's go back to our phones. Here is Bill in Detroit with a good reminder. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to remind people that the recall Rick Snyder petition was still out there. I think they have till September 15th, but you have to go to the recallricksnyder.org, recallricksnyder.org, and find someone in your area to find the petition.
Okay.
Now wait a minute. I thought that first effort didn't make it. There wasn't enough.
No, they're still going. There was a giant moving billboard, recall Rick Snyder, at the Dream Cruise yesterday.
Oh, that's interesting.
Huge.
But Bill, so the trying to get him in for this deadline hasn't worked, right? So what happens if you signed a petition to put it on the ballot like I did?
Well, now they're moving. There's going to be a February election or whatever. Now, if we can make it by the September 15th, I think it is deadline.
Right.
Then there's going to be an election in February that it would be on the ballot then.
Oh, okay.
All the original, you don't have do not sign the petition twice.
Okay.
It's still, you know, that they have some kind of secret count. I don't know. They didn't come up to the number yet. They don't want to, you know, you got to keep that stuff secret because there is the enemy out there as far as, you know what I mean? They're going to try to undermine the petition every way they can. And, you know, nobody, or we don't know out in the public what that number is yet, but I mean, until they have a comfortable number, you know, I guess they're just going to keep taking signatures. And, you know, let's remind people that Wisconsin and Ohio were able to blunt their far right-wing governors. And, you know, if we can't do something here in Michigan, I don't know, you know, we're lost.
Yeah, gotcha. Let's do it.
And so what is it? It's recallrick.org?
Recall Rick Snyder, fire Rick Snyder.org.
Okay. FireRickSnyder.org.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for that update. And it's possible that we may have achieved success on getting an idea of what the Republicans have in mind. This is Johnny in Livonia. Hi, Johnny. You're on the air. Welcome.
How are you?
We're good.
Okay, the Republican, Independent, Democrat, I voted for all of them, right?
Okay.
I will tell you this. I do have a business. I won't tell you where.
Okay.
As far as tax hikes and everything else, it does affect the small business builders. I mean, you have businesses here that want to get larger or put up different areas, right?
No, I don't know. I don't know if you are right. I mean, because who's going to consume it? People don't have money. People don't have jobs. But so I don't know that you are right.
Well, as far as being a business owner, I would understand that if I had more income coming in or less taxes going out, it would be a better way of creating more jobs and more business for others as well, correct? I would agree on that, wouldn't you?
No, not necessarily. So in other words, if you had more money, do you feel comfortable telling us what industry you're in or what business you're in?
Let's see, the hospitality business.
Hospitality.
Hmm.
Okay, so would you, I don't know whether it's a restaurant or a hotel, motel or something like that, but what are you going to do? You're going to expand your place of business?
Well, you would expand it, maybe put up another location, what have you, but with higher taxes, it's impossible to do that.
Never mind. I said I wasn't going to argue, so yeah, go ahead. Just lay it out.
Okay. With higher taxes, of course, it is impossible to do something like that. Number one, your product, everything across the board is more expensive due to high rates and everything else, right? Your fuel, your taxes and what have you, okay? Therefore, you can't grow. Now, on the other hand, as far as you guys, I'm just assuming this because I hear you guys and I hear what you have to say, but you sound like you're part of a large government. This is what you want, right?
What?
What he means is that we support the idea of a large government. Yeah, what I was saying, that I think the only way that we're going to get out of this almost depression now is to have massive government spending, yeah, that puts people back to work. That I don't think what you're saying has been tried and is not working.
I know. Left-leaning, big government. Right-leaning, small government. I get what you're saying.
All right. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Johnny. I think we may have another Republican here. It's Ted in Detroit. Hi, Ted. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. What exactly did you want me to explain?
What do we want him to explain?
Oh. What's the Republican program for creating jobs?
It'd be incentives, lower taxes.
Why do you think, I mean, lower taxes, we've already done that, right? The rich are paying the lowest taxes in the history of the income tax.
Okay. Yeah, this is true. I wanted to speak more, though, on my experience overseas. I spent some time in England, and I just saw the Labour Party completely run the country into the ground, and I saw just a ton of hostility.
You don't think it was the Conservative Party that ran it into the ground under Margaret Thatcher?
No.
Okay.
The newest, I don't know, the Labour Party?
Well, would you say then it was the Republican Party here that has run the country into the ground?
In the last 15 years, yeah.
Okay. All right. I got to get a lot more questions.
You're doing a good job,
yeah,
Peter.
All right. Thank you, Ted. I appreciate it. All right. Here is Kathy in Detroit. Kathy, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a couple points.
Sure.
One of them is, please stop bashing Obama. For God's sakes, look what he was handed.
Wait.
Look what Republicans are doing now.
Kathy, can't we criticize him without bashing him?
Huh? You certainly can.
Okay.
But you're not coming across as criticizing in a supportive manner. He's not up to the job is a bashing.
No, I don't think we've ever said that he's not up for to the job.
He actually quote.
Well, I will say he has shown so far he is not up to the job of combating the Republicans and of on that end and of neutralizing them, let's say, and to create the kind of programs that are necessary to pull us out of this. I mean, he's no FDR. He's closer
to get a medical program.
What's that?
First president to get a nationwide medical program.
You know,
you're going to continue to criticize.
But he didn't even do the single payer,
This is like the biggest handover to these
insurance
private
companies.
Insurance companies. I mean, I think that
probably, I mean, it's good, but it's not good enough.
Well, I don't even think it's good. I mean, it has some good elements to it, but
right.
mostly it's this huge giveaway to the insurance companies.
Granted, but you're not seeing the accomplishments at all.
No, we do. And
not as much.
We list the accomplishments on a regular basis.
I agree. I'm on board with everything. The rich need to be taxed at a higher level. It is totally out of balance. If you look back at the rich taxes in the 60s even, and that's not that far away, it's ridiculous. Everything you say. However, Americans are kind of earning this. How many of your listeners write letters? Email. I was at a protest 2 weeks ago, and like six people were there.
Where were you, Kathy?
Six people. It was outside Representative Conyers' office.
Oh, okay.
Keep the American dream alive.
Well,
people are not. And granted, you can't take a day off work, but try to organize a gas protest. You pick any day of the year and say, Americans, don't buy gas that day, and you will not get cooperation or support.
I don't know what it is, Kathy, because I had that on my website calendar at Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, that they keep the dream alive. And, people don't turn out. I mean, sometimes even when, there's been demonstrations that people have such direct material interest. And I wonder, what are they doing? I mean, don't they realize what's ahead for them? And in terms of the accomplishment of the Obama administration, there's lots of things that are always better under any Democratic administration. But I think every critic of, at least on the left, have said that Obama has just not been tough enough. He's compromised too much. Why in the world didn't he go to the country? And when he allowed these Bush tax cuts, the giveaway to the wealthy, and the Republicans were trying to hold the extension of unemployment benefits hostage. Every time they hold the hostage, and they are. They're economic and political terrorists, just like, they get all upset about when you say. Why doesn't Bush, or excuse me, well, that's an interesting slip. Why doesn't Obama go to the wall with him? Why doesn't he go a Harry Truman on him? Call him the, no good, good for nothing, 100 and whatever Congress it is. He ain't up for it.
Well, I have to believe this brilliant man has learned to tread softly for reasons beyond us.
Where's the big stick?
Than Republicans.
Where's
bottom
the big
line,
stick, though?
I want him back in office.
Well, what? I probably will. But, I got to tell you, Kathy, this will probably make you really unhappy. I know so many people that voted for Barack Obama. And one of the things, Democratic Party voters are extraordinarily ethical people. Unlike the Republican voters, so that no matter what kind of scandal, what kind of shenanigans, how much they're paid off by the politicians and the Republican Party are paid off by the ultra wealthy, they still go there and vote. But Democratic voters who have a high ethical content to their view of the world, when somebody lets them down, they say, screw him. I can't, he didn't do what he said. He wasn't strong enough. He's given in too much. All he talks about is compromise. He talks about compromising John Boehner, the head of the Republicans, he says, we got 95% of what we wanted. I mean, how can the president of the United States be beat that badly? I mean, he's going to wind up like Harding when he should be Roosevelt. All right. Thank you, Kathy. Goodbye. And let's see.
I feel like we just can't please anybody.
Yeah, there you
but
go.
That's true. I mean, you cannot please everybody, especially in a job like this.
Got a lot of truck drivers tonight. Here's Chet. He's in Flint. Chet, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, on the. I think we need to get back to what we used to have 10 or 15 years ago, where it was buy USA products. was a real push for that back a while back, and you don't hear anything about that anymore.
Well, the problem is there are none.
Well, there are none because we've systematically let everything become made in China.
Right.
And unless there's a demand for it, and we make it a point, you know, somehow or other, it just has, we've lost that. And if we could get that back, that put a lot of people to work, actually.
Well Peter, you have a theory about
this.
Well,
yeah, one of the things, though, Chet, is it's kind of like once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in. And the only way we're going to put it back in is really unfortunate. And get this, Chet. I was talking with this somebody at a rally at which the president of UAW was speaking on Saturday, and I was giving, actually, it was my theory, but there's a good article about it on my website, peterwerbe.com and W-E-R-B-E, and it says that the United States is going to become a low-wage area in world production. And that's when jobs will start coming back here. When all the advances that were made by the average working person and middle class person are completely blown away. When all of the restrictions to a free market in labor, which means no regulations, no minimum wage, no unions, nothing. When we're working somewhere close to what they're working in Mexico or China or in the Vietnam or something like that, then they will start saying, okay, let's bring those jobs back to the U.S.
Because now we have this whole new group of suckers who will work for that, you know?
Well, and it's people that don't have any choice.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
I mean, what happens in those countries like China and Mexico, their traditional way of work and support was destroyed. And so they're driven into the cities, and they just become, wage workers.
Little machines.
Yeah. All right, but I hear what you're saying. It's just shoes, shirts, a lot of cars, buy U.S., tough. All right, Chet, thank you very much.
There are websites out there, if you Google, that offer just products. I mean, for kind of your daily life things, shoes and clothes and things like that.
Well, there is Big Buy Michigan.
Yeah, there's one buy, I can't remember. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, and some people say, let's buy in our city.
I shop local.
Yeah.
I almost all. You know,
well, that's good.
Yeah.
Here is Shane in Canton. Hey, Shane, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good evening, guys. Or I should say good morning.
Yeah. Good morning.
All right. And my what I wanted to say is to fix our campaign system. If we were to take, you know how it says that little contribute $1 to the presidential campaign on your tax form? If we were to change that and make it a mandatory, say, 0.5% or percent, across the board, individual, corporate, you know, you name it. Make that a mandatory thing. And then on the commercials and the advertisements, there would be a little logo saying this is a federally sponsored campaign advertisement. I believe that would actually make the politicians running for office actually represent us.
Well, wait a minute. Why wouldn't they still keep taking corporate billions?
Well, I mean, they could still advertise, obviously, because of the First Amendment.
Right.
But they would not get that little logo. And as long as everybody was educated about that, they would realize that this does not necessarily have to be based in fact. This can actually be any kind of slander or whatever we want to throw at you. So, obviously, under the First Amendment, that would still exist.
Well, this is very interesting. As you may know, there was this decision called Citizens United where the Supreme Court has declared that corporations have the same rights as individuals in terms of free speech, and to limit their ability to buy off the whole political system is unconstitutional. In other words, it's constitutional for them to buy off the whole political system. And even, I think you're on the right track, and particularly because, how to eliminate corporate influence. But the amount of money that they have, I mean, to affect elections, and of course, all candidates are. So Barack Obama probably going to spend, wasn't it like $1 billion he spent last time or something like that? Where's he going to get it? He's not going to get it from you and me. He's going to get it from these corporations. So that's one of the reasons he's got to tread lightly. All right, I got to rush quickly, but this is what, Shane, I'm not trying to cut, I'm certainly not trying to cut the ground out from under you, because what number of what you and others have called in about means that we're starting to engage, we're starting to think creatively, and eventually, hopefully, there'll be a people's agenda instead of just a corporate agenda. Coming up at 1 a.m., and we still got your calls coming in. I'm going to be doing two interviews, and they're both about labor. We're going to miss Labor Day. We're going to be off September 4th. And then also September 11th. I don't think we're going to argue politics on September 11th.
Right.
We're going to let that
one
go.
It's the 10th anniversary.
Yep, yep. So here is John in Fowlerville. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. About taxes.
Yeah.
You said that the rich are paying less than they ever have in history or whatever you said. But I recently heard that it was actually that the top 10% are paying 70% of the income tax. So what exactly are you getting that number from? I'm not sure.
Well, the marginal tax rate. I mean, initially, the income tax, when 1912 or 13 or 14, I can't remember exactly what year, it was set up as a tax almost exclusively on wealth. In other words, that the average person made such low wages that they didn't even...
They cut slack.
They didn't even get any, yeah. So, and they pretty much stayed like that till the 1960s. And let me see. Of 80%, we got to nail this down. I mean, the marginal tax rate, what they're paying, is now less than they ever have, no matter how much they pay. If they pay, I mean, I've heard that too, that they pay 70% of tax. They pay, if they're paying 70%, maybe they should be paying 90 or 95%. I don't know. But, there's an old thing about figures don't lie, but liars can figure. And you're just as right to challenge mine as, and to be suspicious of all of them. But I will check that out completely and report back on it. But thank you for bringing that up. And we've got one more caller to go, and then we've got to get our interviews on. And this is Jason from Windsor. Thanks for making our program international. Hi, you're on the air. Oop, did I do something wrong? Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, sorry about that. Just wanted to comment. Obviously our economy and politics works a little differently over here in Canada. However, one thing stays the same no matter where you go, and it's you just cannot keep taxing. You can't spend and spend and spend. So a perfect example of this is back in the early 1990s here in Ontario, our premier came in and he campaigned on cutting waste, and that's exactly what he did. He came in, he cut public sector, he forced hospitals to downsize their budgets, do more with less. Everybody felt it across the board.
Yeah, he screwed people, essentially.
No, he didn't screw anybody.
Mike Harris. Well, Germany, which has not been heavily affected by all this, although its banks may, by this world recession, taxes and spends. The northern tier countries tax and spend, and they have the best standard of living in the entire world. I mean, Canada, which has heavy taxes and spends an enormous amount, has an incredibly higher standard of living than the United States. The lower you tax and the lower you spend, the lower your standard of living is going to be.
Well, but here's the thing. What Mike Harris did was he cut spending so that he could lower taxes to stimulate private sector business. And once those new taxes started coming in, then they started spending money on infrastructure to create jobs.
All right, we're going to have to let it go at that. Thank you. I appreciate it because we're out of time. Thanks again, Jason. I appreciate it. Jalene Jordan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
And thank you, Athena. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes.
There will be a podcast available in about 11 hours. You can go to my website and pick it up, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. You can go to WRIF.com and find
or
it
or our Facebook
as well.
Page.
Oh, yeah, Facebook page. Join us on Facebook. I promise you it's going to get more lively as time goes on. It's Facebook.com/nightcall. We'll do it next week.
Once again, have a good week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Right now, homes are more affordable than they've been in decades. And Quicken Loans has a mortgage program that will help you buy that perfect home. Call Quicken Loans right now. They can even introduce you to a local real estate agent that can guide you through the process step by step. With more than 25 years of helping American homeowners, Quicken Loans makes the process as easy as possible. With a streamlined approach and proactive updates, they provide you with the certainty you need to search for the home of your dreams. And highly trained Quicken Loan specialists are standing by, ready to help you take advantage of this incredible mortgage opportunity. So give Quicken Loans a call now. Call 888-249-1425. Find out how much home you can afford. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. How about a story that is so fascinating that it is about a man that was executed 100 years ago for a crime he probably didn't commit. It segues right into the labor movement back then and some implications for today. And if that's not enough, it ties into Bob Dylan and what motivated him. Woo! What do you think about that? Joining me is William M. Adler. He's written a book called The Man Who Never Died, The Lifetimes and Legacy of Joe Hill, American Labor Icon. And William M. Adler has written for a lot of publications, Esquire, Rolling Stone, Mother Jones. And if you got a good memory, back about 1995, Bill Adler was on the Peter Werby Show talking about his book, Land of Opportunity, about the rise and fall of the Chambers Brothers crack cocaine empire in the Motor City. It's a pleasure to welcome back, even 16 years or so later, Bill Adler. Boy, I better do better than that. Bill Adler, thank you. Welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter. I'm glad to be back here.
Well, some people may have heard of Joe Hill. They know there's a song that goes, I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, as live as you and me. And, you know, it's, no, you're 10 years gone. No, I never died, said he. Who was Joe Hill? That's, I mean, I know you have a whole book, The Man Who Never Died, but what's a sketch to begin our conversation?
Well, Joe Hill was a Swede by birth, and he became probably the most famous radical songwriter, certainly of his day, which was the early 20th century, and maybe of any day. And Joe Hill came to America in 1902 at the age of about 20 or 21, and proceeded to head out west. He emigrated from Sweden to New York and came out west kind of in this migrant stream and worked at unskilled jobs all over the West, mining, on the docks, in the woods, you name it, and eventually started writing songs for this radical union that he joined called the Industrial Workers of the World, or the Wobblies.
Which they never really got a fix on why they called the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, the Wobblies. It sounds almost like an insult.
No, there isn't really a good answer for why. There were a lot of suspicions, but nobody really ever figured out exactly how that nickname came into being.
And they call them the Wobs also.
They're
still around at IWW.org. But go ahead, Joe Hill. We're talking back first part of the 20th century. Joe Hill, immigrant worker, started writing songs. All sounds pretty good so far.
Yeah, He did very well at that, and he became really the signature songwriter for the Wobblies. And it's important here, I think, to say also that songs were a critical part of their movement. And it may be hard to understand now just how significant music and art and culture were to working-class folks back 100 years ago. But it made all the difference in the world, because these folks at the IWW, the Wobblies were trying to organize, were of such disparate background, various ethnicities and nationalities and skin color and language especially. But song brought them together. It was one thing they could do together, and it really it inspired them. It boosted their spirits. It united them, and Joe Hill was their songwriter, and that's why he was so significant.
And the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobs, they had a big presence in northern Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, among the lumberjacks and miners and what have you, the Finns. Particularly, there was a Finnish weekly paper in northern Michigan that had a circulation of about 30,000 in Finnish.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I knew that I wasn't all that familiar with that history up there, but Joe Hill eventually got into legal trouble, as we'll discuss and as you alluded to, and his lawyer, his appellate lawyer, was a guy who was born in Michigan, Orrin N. Hilton, and he had become the chief lawyer for the Western Federation of Miners, which had been out on strike in Pawpaw, Michigan, and I think a couple other places. And then he eventually moved to Denver, Colorado, and eventually became Joe Hill's attorney. But his history goes back to Michigan as well.
Now, the Wobblies were always getting arrested. This is, again, back 100 years ago or so. Why did they run into so much trouble with the law? Although lots of unions did at that point.
Yeah, the Wobblies more than others, though, because they believed and in some ways pioneered civil disobedience in this country. Their main activity was direct action rather than trying to negotiate contracts like the mainstream unions and the American Federation of Labor did. They didn't believe in contracts. In fact, they didn't really believe in wages at all, wage labor. They believed that that workers should control the workplace. So it was a real kind of socialist, egalitarian mentality. And so one of the principal ways they organized people was to conduct street meetings, and that was something that the establishment in all these towns were fearful of, that indeed their unskilled workforce would join the union and become gain some power. So they cracked down whenever they could and wherever they could on meetings of the IWW, and ended up often throwing them in jail and violating their free speech rights. And that's really what the arrests were about, the IWW contending that they should be entitled to free speech and freedom of assembly as well as anybody else. And that was the the genesis of it.
Well, this is an incredible story. The Man Who Never Died, the lifetimes and legacy of Joe Hill, American labor icon. Joe Hill was executed in Utah in 1915, so we got to bring you up to speed on that part of the story. My guest is William Adler. He is the author, and there's a great website for the book, themanwhoneverdied.com. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werby. Now, one of the things that the Wobblies did, of course, they would when they had a big free speech fight, they would bring everybody in from around the area, so you'd have hundreds and hundreds of Wobblies, as they were called, the Wobs, getting arrested. And I'll just read, unless you'd like to read. Do you have a copy of the book right in front of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, right at the, I don't know, what do you call it, the frontis or whatever, you know, where the San Diego Chief of Police, Keno Wilson, in 1912.
Oh, sure.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. This was during probably the biggest and fiercest free speech fight of all in the spring of 1912 when the Wobblies were trying to establish free speech. In that city, the establishment really, really clamped down on them. And this is, as you said, Peter, the chief of police there. These people do not belong to any country, no flag, no laws, no supreme being. I do not know what to do. I cannot punish them. Listen to them singing. They are singing all the time and yelling and hollering and telling the jailers to quit work and join the union. They are worse than animals.
Well, and this is the context in which Joe Hill, American labor icon, which Bill Adler is writing about. So how did, well, were they singing his songs? Were his songs known throughout the labor movement or throughout the IWW movement?
Yeah, they were. His songs were actually a lot better known than he himself was. The Wobblies did not make a big deal out of individuals. In fact, they discouraged kind of idolatry in that sense at all. And so everybody knew his songs, but probably very few people who, unless you had run into him, would have known the name Joe Hill. So, yes, his songs were extremely well known.
And that was 1912, and so and Joe Hill was executed in Utah in 1915. So what happened? I mean, this was a man who was well thought of. He was creative. He was a singer. For all reports and certainly in your biography, he was a pretty decent man that took the side of the ordinary working person. How did he wind up? He was shot, wasn't he?
He was. He was shot by firing squad.
Yeah. What? Tell us the story, how he wound up meeting that fate.
Joe Hill had never even set foot in Utah until about 4 months before he was arrested for murder. And he came to Utah at the height of IWW conflict with the establishment in Utah. That was the summer of 1913. The IWW had won a big strike of railroad construction workers, railroad stiffs, they called them, against the largest and most powerful corporation in Utah, Utah Construction Company. And the company retaliated by hiring about 24 thugs to storm an IWW street meeting in the aftermath of the strike victory. And they started busting heads and clubbing everybody, and then the fire department came and hosed everybody down as if, you know, I mean, just like the 60s civil rights footage that we've all seen. And that was the climate in which Joe Hill found himself in a world of trouble. And what happened was this. In January of 1914, on the 10th of January, a grocer in Salt Lake City named John Morrison was at work in his grocery store. It was closing time on a Saturday night. He and two of his sons were cleaning up the store when all of a sudden two masked and armed gunmen burst into the store, pointed their revolvers at John Morrison, said in unison, "We've got you now," and fired and killed him. One of those gunmen was alleged to have been Joe Hill. The reason that he was suspected was because about 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours after the murder, Joe Hill banged on the door of a doctor's office about 5 miles south of the crime scene. And the doctor let him in, and Joe Hill had a fresh bullet wound in his lung. And the suspicion was that one of the grocer's sons there had fired a shot at one of the assailants in the moment before the grocer's son died as well. There were two deaths, the father and son, in the grocery store. And that bullet wounded Joe Hill. So that was the police suspicion. So
well, that's pretty circumstantial on the face
yeah.
of it. Yeah, I mean, but not completely off the charts.
No, I mean, plausible. They never found the bullet in the store, and Joe Hill didn't have a bullet in him. So whoever shot Joe Hill, whatever happened to that bullet, it sailed through him, and it entered into his left lung and exited under his left shoulder. So you would think that that bullet would have been in the store, but it was never found in the store.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was the entirety of the state's evidence against Joe Hill, and I think it's important here to say that when he was tried, the state had no motive for Joe Hill having committed that murder. They had no positive identification of Joe Hill. They had no murder weapon. All they had was the fact that he had been shot on the same night that supposedly one of the murder victims had fired a weapon and perhaps shot one of the assailants.
So he was sentenced to death, and the death sentence was carried out.
Yeah, it was. And he was, in a sense, complicit in that. And that's a key part of this book, Peter, is that he probably didn't have to die. If he was innocent, and I believe after 5 years of investigation that he was innocent, and I developed a fair amount of new evidence to support that contention, Hill never testified in his own behalf. And there were several reasons for that, I think. But if he had testified and he had explained the circumstances of that gunshot wound on that night, he would have had, a plausible alibi and I believe would have been found not guilty, or at least after he was convicted, if he had chosen to testify on appeal, or really any time almost up until the moment the firing squad killed him, if he had testified about what the circumstances were of that crime, then I think he would have been released from prison.
Well, you know, Bill Adler, on the face of it, I know a little more about this, but I'll bet you if people are hearing this for the first time, they're thinking, you know, this guy sounds like he was guilty. You know, he comes up with a bullet wound suspiciously close to when a shot is fired, and he refuses to take the stand and testify in his own defense. So but for one thing, and I was startled to learn this, that your book, The Man Who Never Died, The Lifetimes and Legacy of Joe Hill, American Labor Icon, is the first full-scale biography of this legendary songwriter and who's been a labor martyr, Joe Hill. I'm just flabbergasted. There's been nothing big done before, given, as you say, the iconic status that he's always had within the labor movement.
Yeah, there have been. There was one biography done. It was a master's thesis. It was published in the late 1960s. About Hill, and up until now, it's really been the standard biography of Hill, but it doesn't really go very deeply into Hill's life and times. It really focuses much more on the murder case and the legal case. And even then, it concludes, as everybody who's ever looked at Joe Hill's case has concluded, that he was denied a fair trial. But that doesn't answer the question as to whether he might have been guilty or innocent. And that question generally is punted by historians.
Is that a problem? I mean, one way or the other? I mean, certainly we want historic accuracy, and we want to know the truth of matters, even if it's a century ago that this all occurred. Yet what Joe Hill represented then and represents now, that either way, I don't think that's ever going to be taken away from him.
No, I don't think it'll be taken away from him, but I think what's interesting, you talk about the historical record, and I think now we can point, if not conclusively, pretty closely to Hill's innocence, and that is one thing that's new in this book.
Can you give me a thumbnail sketch
of
that?
Absolutely. I mean, there are. When I started the book, I did kind of look at it as a murder mystery, and I wanted to examine it as a cold case, and I saw myself as a gumshoe in that. And I developed a couple of things. One, Hill, on the night he was shot, told the doctor who treated him that he was shot by a friend of his in a row over a woman. But he refused to testify about that in court, as I said. And the only reason we know that is because the doctor did testify, but Joe Hill never named names. He didn't say who shot him, and he didn't say over what woman. So up until now, we haven't known that. But in the course of doing this research, and I should mention that the bulk of the research I did on this particular area of the book was done in the Detroit Ann Arbor area, both at the Labadie Collection at the University of Michigan and at the Ruther Library at Wayne State. And without those institutions, I could not have done this book, I have to say that.
And by the way, it's terrifically illustrated with photographs from that era and drawings of Joe Hill. Very, very attractive book indeed. Man Who Never Died by William Adler, who's my guest on the Peter Werby Show. So, I don't know, Bill. It still sounds a little shaky. I mean, if I was going to go to a doctor and I just shot a grocer, I wouldn't go there and say, hey, treat my wound. I just shot a grocer. I'd say my friend shot me because I was arguing over a woman.
Right. I would probably say the same thing. So here's what I found. I found the woman. I found who she was and better yet, I found correspondence from her to another researcher, a fellow who was writing about Joe Hill back in the 1940s. He was an academic, and he was actually at work on a novel about Joe Hill and the IWW. And he had found this woman. Her name was Hilda Eriksson. She was also of Swedish descent, and at the time she was a 20- or 21-year-old, fair-haired, blue-eyed. Joe Hill wrote songs about her. And Joe Hill was in love with her. And the problem was that so was another man. And the other man was Joe Hill's closest friend, a guy that he had shared a tar paper shack with on the docks in Southern California when they were both dock workers, and then who had come to Utah because they had met two brothers, also Swedes, who had come to the docks in Southern California and then had returned to Utah and invited Joe and his friend Otto Appelquist back to Utah. Anyway, I'll make this brief, but Otto Appelquist had been engaged to this woman, Hilda Eriksson, and Hilda broke off the engagement about a week before Joe Hill was shot and therefore a week before the grocer and his son were murdered. Joe Hill proceeded to taunt and tease Otto Appelquist about the fact that Hilda had broken off the engagement and said that, you know, Hilda likes me better.
Nah, never a good idea.
No, especially when somebody's carrying a gun. And so Otto shot him in a fit of anger. And Hilda related this in this letter written 35 years after the fact and never before found. I found it in the attic of the researcher's daughter who lived in Ann Arbor. I found her, and she went up in the attic, and she found a box of documents that her late father had left her, and it was in there.
This is amazing. In fact, I'm looking at the clock. I've got about 5 minutes, and that's more time than probably one would think. But I want to get to two things. One, Bob Dylan, how he figures into this, and also Joe Hill's ashes. So let's start with Bob Dylan. Joe Hill, besides being the focus of this trial, executed for murder in 1915, a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, the Wobblies, that you're chronicling in your book, The Man Who Never Died. The publisher, by the way, is Bloomsbury. You go to BloomsburyUSA.com, but best go to TheManWhoNeverDied.com. There'll also be a link on my website. So Joe Hill was a songwriter. Bob Dylan was a songwriter, but so was like Leon Russell. How does this connect up?
Well, I was reading Dylan's memoir about a year after it came out. I think I was reading it in the summer of 2005, his memoir called Chronicles, Volume 1. I hope we'll see a Volume 2 someday. In any event, Dylan devoted several pages to Joe Hill. In the book, he told about how when Dylan first came to New York, he heard that ballad that you mentioned earlier, Peter, I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill Last Night. But he had no idea who Hill was, and so he started reading up on him, and he learned that Hill was a Swedish immigrant who was also a union organizer and a songwriter, and that Woody Guthrie had called him his forerunner, the forerunner of Woody Guthrie, and that, Dylan said, was all he needed to know. Because if Joe Hill was good enough for Woody, he was good enough for Dylan.
There you go. And Joe Hill's ashes, after he was executed by firing squad in Utah in 1915, his body was cremated, and Joe Hill's wishes were what?
Well, his immediate wish was that they drag his body across the state line into Wyoming because he said he never wanted to be found dead in Utah.
There you go.
And then he wrote a will, and indeed he it was a poetic will, and in it he asked that his ashes be cremated and his ashes be spread. And that's what happened at the first anniversary of his execution. The IWW was meeting in convention in Chicago, and they distributed packets of his ashes, I think 600-odd packets, and they were distributed by IWW delegates all over the world.
So every local had one?
Yeah. In all 48 states and really countries all over the world.
I haven't had a chance, and I'm certainly going to go through all of the book. I mean, it looks fascinating. As I said, it's a beautiful job, great photographs and illustrations, Joe Hill's cartoons. And do you know the disposition of the pack of ashes that went to the IWW headquarters in Chicago?
There was one packet that was found many, many years later. Of course, that was 1916, the year after he was killed, that they distributed the ashes. But the following year, the U.S. Postal Service, or the post office back then, confiscated a pack of his ashes because they were basically confiscating as much IWW mail as they could due to the IWW's anti-war stance during the American involvement in World War I. And they found that the post office seized a packet of Joe Hill's ashes. They ended up in the National Archives, and they resided there in a filing cabinet until 1986, when some archivists found them and notified the union that there was a packet of his ashes there. Would they like to come claim them? Which they did, and those final ashes were taken and distributed here in Colorado, actually, where I live, and over a miners' memorial where IWW miners had been executed by the Colorado State Guard back in 1927. So it was a fitting end to Joe Hill's ashes. They sprinkled them over the memorial to those miners.
Well, I just quickly looked up in the index of The Man Who Never Died about your book about Joe Hill, and you mentioned Billy Bragg recorded Phil Oakes' song, Joe Hill. But Billy Bragg was in Chicago, and with the Secretary General of the Union, I guess it was not too long ago, I mean 20 years ago or so, they sprinkled what was left of his ashes into beer and drank them.
That's right.
This is Bragg. Billy Bragg's story, he told me, the great singer-songwriter.
That's right. He does say that he swallowed Joe Hill's ashes. And I talked to a folk singer in Oregon who has some of Joe Hill's ashes in his guitar, he says. So they're still out and about.
Well, it's such an incredible story. We've barely scratched the surface about the man, about the times, about the union, about their successes, their final defeat. And this is an absolutely terrific book. It's the first full-scale biography of this legendary songwriter, Joe Hill. The book is called The Man Who Never Died, The Lifetimes and Legacy of Joe Hill, American Labor Icon. My guest has been the author, William M. Adler, and it is published by Bloomsbury. You can go to themanwhoneverdied.com, and I'll have a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. Bill Adler, thanks for joining me on the program.
Thanks so much, Peter. I appreciate it.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote.
at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
One little fish oil pill. You know, this powerful little pill is great for your heart, that it's great for your joints. It even has powerful benefits for your skin and brain function. But the fish oils of today are sadly incomplete because they don't contain the super antioxidant power of clinically proven krill oil that can increase joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days. Until now. Introducing the free bottle giveaway of Krill Omega-3 from Purity Products, our most powerful fish oil formula ever. The only thing our advanced Krill Omega-3 fish oil is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering anyone a full-size bottle of our krill oil as part of a nationwide free trial. Just call 1-800-950-5868. To request yours, you can't go to stores. The only way to get your free bottle is to go to the phone. The number is 1-800-950-5868. Call now and claim your bottle absolutely free. 1-800-950-5868. That's 1-800-950-5868.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Peter Werby here with you. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to start just with a dirty little secret. As you probably know, I interview probably 80 to 90 people a year, very frequently. Maybe 80% of those people are authors, and I never read the book ahead of time. Usually I can't. Sometimes I get it a day ahead of time. Sometimes I get it the same day. And this interview is going to be with the producer-director of a DVD, and I thought, you know, I don't have to watch this. I can do it the same way I do a book. But this morning I said, you know, I'm going to watch this whole thing. And I am so glad I did. This is such a terrific account of ultimately a struggle of David versus Goliath. And here's what's going on. In fact, I think I'm going to do this before I even start. I'll introduce the person who made this all happen with lots of other people, of course. She's Joan Sekler. She's a producer-director of a DVD called Locked Out. It's a film by her, and it's narrated by the actor Peter Coyote. And it's a story of how a small-town miners in California stood up and faced down a multi-billion-dollar global corporation. And we're reaching Joan Sekler in her office on the West Coast. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I think maybe just to kind of set the stage for this, I can just read a little from the beginning of it. And it says, and accurately, this is the compelling story of 560 unionized borax miners in the desert town of Boron, California, who faced off against Rio Tinto. And that's a British-Australian multi-billion-dollar global corporation. It's the third largest mining company in the world. Boron has about 2,000 people. It's really ordinary working-class Americans. And suddenly their contract expired. With the, they belong to the ILWU, the International Longshoremen Workers Union. And this is something, this is kind of in the desert, how the longshoremen are organizing here. But the company, like they so often do, wanted to drastically cut the miners' pay and benefits, and the workers rejected this, and you would think they'd get beat up pretty badly. Well, this is the story of Locked Out, the story of the Boron miners' struggle. And Joan Sekler, the producer-director. So where to begin on all this? Why in the, how in the world would these miners, these working class men and women, figure they could take on this multinational, this huge company that mines all over the world? Where did they get the idea they could ever win?
Well, it was through the meetings that they had over the months where their contract had expired in late 2009, and there were incredible numbers of union meetings, committees, et cetera, to talk about, well, what are we going to do? Because we've had this same contract for 40 years, which has been tweaked up and down, and people have, you know, some of issues have been raised over the years when the contract has expired, and there's been give and take on both sides over the years. So this time, Rio Tinto decided that they were going to throw out 40 years worth of contract language, and they just slapped on the table a contract which was only like 8 or 9 pages, and in it was like cuts, 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 cuts. And the workers were shocked. They were absolutely shocked. And so after many, many meetings, and with, especially with the international ILWU, which is based in San Francisco, and would come down, we would drive down to the desert to talk to them, these workers decided this is it. They want to make a stand, keep their middle class lives. And so they decided to vote to accept the lockout. And it was 100% of the people who voted to accept the lockout, and that was in the end of January. And then on January 31st, the gates closed, and they were not allowed to go to work. And instead, security guards were hired from different parts of the country, and replacement workers were hired from different parts of the country, and they were escorted in to replace these miners. Not so it was a very interesting story, and I started reading about it in the LA Times, and that's what perked my interest, and I got permission from the ILWU to make a documentary about the whole struggle, not knowing whether the lockout would last 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. And as it turned out, it lasted almost 4 months. And I guess what was so beautiful about filming this documentary were the workers who had never, never been involved in anything political before in their lives. They raise their kids go to college, they go to church, they have a lot of family living in neighboring towns whom they get together with, and they've never been involved in any kind of a political action before.
Well, that's what you get, certainly, out of Locked Out, your DVD, this transformative quality that that happened as a result of being locked out by the company. Let me just clear up one thing. I actually assigned the wrong name to the ILWU. It's the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. And my guest is Joan Seckler. She's the producer and director of the DVD that chronicles the struggle of this union against this big multinational. And Joan Seckler has directed the award-winning documentary Unprecedented, the 2000 presidential election, a number of other very important documentaries as well. And she's been the assistant producer and or publicist for numerous political documentaries, including the Academy Award-winning film The Panama Deception and Yellow Wasp, Anatomy of a War Crime. One of the things that so many things occurred to me watching this was I thought, how in the world could they take on this big company? And tell us something about Rio Tinto. And this is, we say, this multi-billion dollar multinational. And how extensive is it? It's the third largest mining concern in the world. So what does that mean in practical terms?
Well, they do have mines in almost every continent. And they have a very bad reputation amongst workers and amongst communities, because a lot of times they go in to an area without getting all their permits and without meeting with the residents of the area, and they start building a mine. And a lot of times they've destroyed environment, they've destroyed people's homes and communities, and they've polluted water. Terrible situation, not only in various areas of the United States, but also abroad. So it is remarkable that these 560 miners decided to stand up against Rio Tinto, which has gotten away with everything for so many years. Nobody has stood up to them before. So this was a remarkable story.
It was indeed. In fact, they have a presence in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, correct?
Oh, yes. In the Upper Peninsula of Michigan is an absolutely beautiful area of forest and land, which people have used for years for hiking, camping. They go kayaking on the rivers, etc. And it's also a place where an Indian tribe has lived for generations. And Rio Tinto started digging for minerals in the Upper Peninsula without getting all their permits. And it is very, very dangerous what they're doing because it's called sulfide mining. And when sulfide is in contact with air and water, it becomes sulfuric acid. And that acid will get into the streams, which will go into Lake Superior. It's really, really awful. So all the residents in the area, different environmental groups, in the Sierra Club, the Wildlife Federation, they have all gotten together, and they have met with Rio Tinto. They have met with the city, with the state. They've even filed a lawsuit against this mining company.
This is all
in
Michigan.
So far, nothing's happened as far as environmentalists and people in the community winning. So far, Rio Tinto is going ahead with steamrolling with building this very dangerous mine.
And this is in Michigan. The DVD, the film we're talking about, is Locked Out, the story of the Boron miners' struggle. And this is a struggle that took place in Boron, California, when almost 600 unionized borax miners faced off against Rio Tinto. And they have holdings all across the world. Now, they actually, the miners here, this ILWU local in this small town, small local, they got support from all over the world. In your film, Locked Out, you see this incredible expression from, you know, Australia and the demonstration in London. Tell us about some of that.
Well, as part of the strategy of outreach and getting support, they had a committee. It was a media committee, which, number one, reached out to local and national newspapers, radio, television, in order to tell their story and send out press releases. But the other thing they did was to organize the media that they created themselves. And so they created a Facebook page and a website, which they had never done before. Many of them, their children had to teach them how to do that because they had never done it before. And they did tremendous amount of research. They landed up getting invited to many places around the world where Rio Tinto has mines or where they have offices. For example, their main office is in London and their subsidiary office is in Australia. So in both those cases, they were invited to come and speak. They were invited to join in protest demonstrations in support of them. And in London, they actually went to the shareholder meeting of Rio Tinto, which is held once a year in London.
This is these industrial workers from Boron, California, made the trip to London. Wow.
They did. And they flew to London. The union paid for it. And they spoke at the microphone and during the Q&A period. And they talked about what happened to their livelihood, and they wanted answers, and of course they didn't get very many answers. So they did a tremendous amount of outreach, and they got literally thousands of Facebook remarks of support and phone calls. It was just an incredible story. And the workers did this themselves. I mean, yes, the union certainly helped in many, many ways. But the workers stepped up and, you know, democratized their whole struggle. So it's a very unique situation that you don't see in many struggles today.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Joan Sackler. She's the producer-director of Locked Out. It's a film that she's made chronicling the struggle of these unionized Borax miners in the desert town of Boron, California. They're fighting this multinational mining company, Rio Tinto. It's narrated by Peter Coyote. It's interesting in and of itself. You could get this. You can go to lockedout2010.org, sit and watch it and think, yeah. Yeah, it might, you know, be kind of inspiring. The other thing you could do is get some of your neighbors together. Show it at your union hall. Show it at your church. Show it at a school. Because in many ways, this shows what ordinary people can do. And a thread through here that Joan Sackler is weaving is that these are people that never did this before. People say, well, how are we going to get out of this mess we're in general in this country? Well, one of the things that is done is self-organizing. Although these people, as we've been saying, had lots of support. So they had lots of support from other unions as well in California, correct?
Correct. Yes. The L.A. County Federation of Labor organized a caravan which included huge truckloads of food, which the Teamsters drove up in these giant trucks all the way up to Boron, and the workers started a food pantry because their salary had been too much to be able to get food stamps. However, they needed to eat for their families, and so this food pantry was started, and all the miners' families came, and they were able to get free food. The other thing that the union did, the international union did, was that they raised funds to help these workers so that they wouldn't have to lose their homes. They could pay their mortgages and their bills, and nobody lost a home and nobody had their lights turned out during this whole struggle.
Now,
it is amazing.
It is, and I would highly recommend it. Locked Out is the name of the DVD. And you mentioned at the beginning when the corporation said, okay, we can't come to a conclusion for a contract, the one we've had for, you know, four decades, so we're locking you out, we're hiring replacement workers, and that replacement workers is rather the official benign word that's used for people to take the jobs of unionized people. Union people call them scabs. Jack London, in fact, go to Google and just look up, I can't recite it by memory, but Jack London, the great American author, described scabs in a little paragraph and nothing lower that in his estimation. But who were the replacement workers that took the jobs of the workers in Boron, California?
Well, there was a company back east, I think they're in Pennsylvania, that is basically a union-busting company, and Rio Tinto hired them to hire replacement workers, and they came from around the country. They were not local. They were definitely not local.
Oh, that's what I wondered. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing
happened
here in the Detroit newspaper strike. It cost the Detroit newspapers a 10-year strike. Was it 5 years? 5 years, I guess. And, so they brought in all these replacement workers, and they were paying them like triple what they would have had to pay their union workers.
Wow.
Yeah, but they wanted to do anything to break the union. So, all right, so they had all, and that's part of the footage in Locked Out. So you see these busloads and these SUVs. These filled with these replacement workers, what the unionists called scabs. Tell us a little about this. What's portrayed in your DVD, Locked Out?
Well, there are two scenes. There's a daytime scene and an evening scene. During the day, the miners took shifts at the gate, and they would walk along or in front of a scab's car as they were going in or out of the plant. And they didn't touch the car. There was no confrontation. But what they did was to hand out the literature that they had written up. They put out a bulletin, and it talked about the strike and what was happening. I mean, the lockout and what was happening. And they gave it to everybody going in and out. They also had conversations with some of them and said, look, we understand why you're going into work. You need a job. But while you're there, would you please give us information about what is happening inside? What kind of meetings are taking place with management? And are you putting the product of Borax together to have it shipped to customers around the world? What is happening? And so they did get information. They got information about how these workers were unskilled. They didn't know what they were doing. And they messed up a lot of the orders so that customers were very angry about what had happened. And also, a lot of times, the scab would come out with a truck pretending that they were loaded up with the Borax ready to be shipped around the globe, and indeed, their truck was empty. So during the day, they spent time trying to talk to the replacement workers. But in the evening, that's when all the families came out, stood on a line on both sides of the road, and just screamed and yelled at them when they were coming out. More or less like what you see with Verizon strikers on the East Coast now, where they're just screaming and yelling at the scabs and really angry.
I wonder if that has any effect. I guess it's hard to tell. On the cover, or on the, what, in the case of your film, your DVD case, Locked Out, they show, are those armed guards or are those like sheriff's deputies?
They're sheriffs. Okay. It's very interesting because the Kern County Sheriff's Department was put in charge of watching everything that happened outdoors and near the gate. And secretly, they were supportive of the Boron miners because Kern County sheriffs are unionized and they've been working without a contract for a long time, and they really understood what these Boron miners were going through.
They probably knew some of them. That's what happened in the Detroit newspaper strike.
They probably knew some of them.
Yeah, during the Detroit newspaper strike, the Oakland County sheriffs actually took out an ad in the strike paper saying, "We support the right of people to strike."
Oh, wow.
Right. I hope, and I know this always happens because people get in their car and they turn on the radio and they go, "Ooh, what are they talking about?" We're talking about a film by Joan Seckler, who is the producer-director of Locked Out. And it's a story of how these small-town miners in Boron, California, stood up against this huge multinational corporation and were locked out. That means they just kicked them all out because they couldn't come to a contract and brought in replacement workers. But eventually it was settled. Why did I was shocked. I thought this was going to have a sad ending. Why did Rio Tinto, this enormous corporation that'll do almost anything around the world, why did it agree to settle at least fairly amicably with such a small group of workers?
Well, the answer is money. They lost a lot of money because their replacement workers were unskilled, made a lot of mistakes. And, in fact, Borax is used in many, many different products, including LCD screens. And one of the Rio Tinto's largest customers is Samsung. And apparently, after processing the Borax in a wrong way, it was shipped to Samsung, and they in turn took this mineral and put it in their LCD TVs, and thousands of the TVs were broken and couldn't be used.
Oops.
So Samsung, you know, threatened to sue, and in the end, Rio Tinto had to pay them a lot of money. So they lost a lot of money. And on top of that, there was a lawsuit filed with the National Labor Relations Board for this illegal contract and not being able to negotiate. They wouldn't negotiate. They just said take it or leave it. So it was a combination of things that they finally said, okay, this is it. And they brought back the contract, which they've had on and off for 40 years, and they signed a decent contract. I would say the one thing that the workers had to give up which will not affect them but will affect new workers, is that new workers will no longer have a fixed pension the way the workers right now have it. Instead, they're going to have a 401k.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we're almost out of time, and we mentioned you as the producer director of Locked Out, which is a in many ways a creative but also a technical role in producing films. Joan Seckler, as a person, here you're involved with this great. The emotions that are expressed in this are just incredible. How did it affect you as a person?
It affected me greatly because. I have never made a documentary about a worker's struggle before, and I just fell in love with a lot of these people, and I was very enamored of the work that they did. So I learned a lot from them. They learned a lot from me. And I'm just hoping that your listeners would be interested enough to get the DVD at lockedout2010.org. That's LOCKEDOUT 2010.org. You can read more about the film, and you can order it online. It's very inexpensive.
And as I said, having just watched it a few hours ago, it's an extraordinary documentary. I mean, all of the cinematic qualities are just incredible. The people, every time I thought, well, this is going to be a little small story that has to do with this little town in Southern California. Suddenly you're in London. Suddenly you're back, realizing that Rio Tinto has this connection with the Spanish fascist dictatorship of the 1930s and 1940s. So it's an incredible story. And ultimately, David beats Goliath. And that's what I think is so heartening. So not only is this quote interesting, it's a possible resource because right now all of us are functioning as individuals. These people acted together. They pooled their skills. They made connections and they won. So I would heartily say just get it as an individual, but also get your neighbors, get your relatives, show it at some place where you can get neighbors together, and who knows what will come out of that. So it's lockedout2010.org. Joan Seckler, the producer and director of Locked Out, has been my guest, and there'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Joan Seckler, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
How old's the roof on your home? If it's over 15 years old, how much longer will it last before the leaks begin? Think about the damage. Then think about this. If it's time for a new roof, call Sears to get your roofing done right. And if you call Sears right now, you'll save $500. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears licensed fully insured contractors install a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call now. So call Sears for a free in-home consultation. 1-877-938-1414. Hurry. Offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So if you need a new roof, call Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears. One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans. Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing. housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
More rock now on the Riff.
Yeah.